closing. It's Corbin, Ziggler, and Rude. Someone's going to eat dog food.
That's right, Woodchuck Chuckers. It's Groundhog Day.
Then put your...
Reigns and the Usos against Corbin, Ziggler, and Rude. Someone's going to eat dog food.
That's right, Woodchuck Chuckers. It's Groundhog Day.
Then put your...
Reigns and the Usos against Corbin, Ziggler, and Rude. Someone's going to eat dog food.
That's right, Woodchuck Chuckers. It's Groundhog Day.
I'm reliving the same day over and over.
Then put your...
Reigns and the Usos against Corbin, Ziggler, and Rude. Someone's going to...
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Fight me.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Because of the Super Bowl, they dubbed that SmackDown show on Friday night Super SmackDown. It was a super waste of my time, is what it was. Super Bowl, Super SmackDown. Later this month, we have Super Showdown in Saudi Arabia. I guess this is your Super Sound Off, episode 637 here for Sunday, February 2nd, 2020, Groundhog Day. We got Roman Reigns in another match with King Corbin and his merry band of losers on Friday night. Every week is fucking Groundhog Day on that show. Today's podcast could not be happening on a more appropriate day. I see that Staten Island Chuck and Punxsutawney Phil both failed to see their shadows this morning, which means an early spring instead of six more weeks of Reigns versus Corbin. I'll believe it when I see it. Super Bowl 54 is tonight. The San Francisco 49ers against the Kansas City Chiefs. Garoppolo against Mahomes. I don't bet, but if I did, my money would be on the 49ers, 28-24. That is my prediction. As the 471 listeners, according to Podbean, that I had last month from the state of Missouri, throw their phones down in disgust. Well wishes to the hitman, Bret Hart, who already put prostate cancer in a sharpshooter and won. He noted on Instagram this week that he is scheduled to have surgery soon for skin cancer. He's having a basal cell carcinoma removed soon from his left shoulder. He says, another opportunity to remind everybody to look after your health and get checked and wear more sunscreen. I just emptied half of my bottle of sunscreen spray on my body when I was in the Bahamas for the Jericho cruise. I'm not even kidding. I mean, I must have emptied 50 to 60% of this can. I wasn't taking any chances. See, I don't have great olive skin. So the burned look, burned beyond recognition look, is typically not a good look for me. And of course, not safe. So, but he's not kidding. He's not kidding. You really don't want to play around with that. The sun is nothing to mess with. So I think he'll kick cancer's ass once again. He'll do it all over again. We need the hitman around for years to come. We can't have anything happen to the hitman. He's been through enough. Look at what this guy's been through in his life. You know, on the one hand, you could say he's lived a very charmed life, right? He's had a great career. He's been married a couple of times, has a whole bunch of kids, fans all over the world. But the hitman has been through some shit in his life. And so this is just another challenge for him to have to go through. But I was, funny enough, when I read about this, I had just ordered... Before I even read about this story, I had just ordered a shirt from his pro wrestling tee store about a week ago. He's got some cool ones up there, so I'm just waiting for it to arrive. But Bret is Steve Austin's next guest. Their interview has already been taped a number of weeks ago for the next episode of the Broken Skull Sessions. They taped the interview, I think, out in L.A. I would imagine, there's no air date announced, but I would imagine that it would probably be airing either after the Saudi Arabia show on the network, or after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which isn't until next month. But we still don't have an air date yet, but I am looking forward to that interview. If you want to support the podcast, there's a whole bunch of ways you can do that. Audible, of course, is just one way. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster will get you a 30-day trial of the service for free, and one free audiobook of your choice that you get to keep whether you stick with the service or even if you cancel, so you don't get billed before the 30 days are up. For all the wrestling books that you can cash in on, you know, Mayor Kane, and you can pre-order Jim Ross's next book for free, which is out next month, Under the Black Hat. Vince from Anchorage, Alaska, wrote in with a recommendation. And that recommendation was the autobiography of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as narrated by LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow, and Star Trek. Don't forget Star Trek. I remember Reading Rainbow when I was a kid. I remember the Reading Rainbow theme song. I still have it stuck in my head. Now, how many of you knew that Chaka Khan sang that song? I only learned this like 10 years ago. I had no idea. But yes, if you want to hear about the life of Dr. King, the idol of one Vince McMahon, although you'd never know it based on how he's booked some of his own talent over the years. I think Dr. King would be appalled by Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is a huge Martin Luther King mark. He loves him. He has pictures of him on the wall, on TV, whenever he would be in a segment backstage. We just had Martin Luther King Day here a few weeks ago. Who better to narrate his life story than LeVar Burton? You can get that book for free. All you got to do is use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Sign up for the trial. You can download the book for free. And feel free to send in any other recommendations you think people may be interested in as well. If you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a spiffy little nickname and a shout-out. By the way, you don't have to leave it in my hands. You know, if there's no notes field for you to input it, just send me an email after you drop the donation. Let me know what the name is, and you can suggest your own nickname. You know, yeah. See, unlike WWE, I give you guys some creative freedom. So you don't have to leave it all on my shoulders if you have a name in mind. Just email me and let me know. I want to say thank you to the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. For some reason, I see this auto-corrected to Portland Pop-Tart. I don't know why that happened. I used to eat Pop-Tarts. I think they're delicious, the strawberry ones. But I can't say that one has ever donated to the show via PayPal. Until now. Deadpool James Herrera, John Loose Cannon Lopez, the Maniac Moderator, Jeff Lipman, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Craig Pitbull Brown. Holy cow, it's been a few years since we've heard from the Pitbull. I've not seen a shout-out listed here for Craig, a PayPal shout-out, in quite a long time, so hopefully he's doing well. Killshot Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichert, Stephen Handyman Halistick, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Josh the Shooter Stockton, the Mississauga Missionary, Steve Kenny, who just turned 30, so happy birthday to Kenny. I'll have a Super Bowl shot later in your honor. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Mass Debate Featherweight, Matt Fate, the Winterville Warrior, Joshua Fornville, Nick the Punisher, Pulsifer, Jared Dark Knight Mysterio. It was good to talk to Jared on my Dynamite live stream on Wednesday night. He called in. I also want to send a get well shout out to Darrow Bishop. You may know that name from our Facebook group. He's in the hospital right now recovering from a heart valve replacement. And so best wishes to him. Hopefully this episode will help him pass the time. And also Willie Chuck Jr., thank you for the kind review on iTunes. He calls the podcast Appointment Listening. And shout out to Trent, who is a big-time supporter of the podcast this week on Pro Wrestling Tees. I very much appreciate that. So the Royal Rumble is over, and of course we did the Royal Rumble pool, as we do every year in our Facebook group. We set a new record this year, over 2,500 entrants across, I think it was 81 total pools. Congratulations to all of the winners in each of those pools. And congratulations to the Ultimate Rumble Pool winners from Wednesday night. I spun the wheel live on YouTube to pick the top three winners, third, second, and first place, at the conclusion of my AEW Dynamite review. If you missed it, you want to go back and watch that. They were randomly chosen. Third place winner, CJ Gill. Second place winner, Jorge Santander Martinez. And the first place grand prize winner, Michael Snyder. I know some of them have been in touch, I think, with either Zach or Julian in the group. If you have not been in touch with them, please get in touch with either me or them. That way I can put you in touch with them and You can get them your address and information, and we'll make sure that those prizes are sent out to you in a timely fashion. And if any of you guys can attend the Pro Wrestling Magic Show in New Jersey on February 22nd, because I understand some people, they may not even live near, you know, in New Jersey or even in this country, and may not be able to make it. But if you can and you do want those tickets, you got to let me know. And I will let the promoter know, and we'll take care of that for you. So again, congratulations to all of the winners. There was a massive shakeup, corporate shakeup, in WWE management on Thursday, with Vince McMahon forcing out his top two lieutenants, his co-presidents, George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, both of whom had been with the company for well over a decade. It was just 2 years ago that they were promoted to co-presidents and were appointed to the company's board of directors. The announcement this week said that they would depart the company effective immediately and will no longer serve on the boards. Not only have they been removed from their posts unceremoniously, this was not some kind of, this did not come off as some kind of organized mutual dismissal here. You know, just kind of out of nowhere on a Thursday, a week before earnings, this announcement comes out and they get booted off the board. And so this guy, Frank Riddick III, who served as a member of the board for over 11 years, has been named interim chief financial officer. He'll report directly to Vince McMahon. My condolences. And the company has began a search for a permanent chief financial officer and a chief revenue officer. This was the quote. This was the corporate speak press release quote from Vince McMahon. "I would like to thank George and Michelle for their 10-plus years of service and contributions to the organization. I am grateful for all that was accomplished during their tenure, but the board and I decided a change was necessary as we have different views on how best to achieve our strategic priorities moving forward." So this is an alarming move to make 1 week before their investor conference call. They have Q4 earnings coming up. Some people, I see some people online saying, oh, the first quarter earnings are next week. No, this is the earnings for the fourth quarter, end of the year. And I heard the news and I just thought to myself, you know, with George gone, now who will they get to dodge and not answer questions when they're asked on these conference calls? The news, as you might imagine, sent their stock plummeting, down as much as 28% on Friday. At one point, it was 28%. The stock went down, it went up a little bit, but it ultimately settled at a much lower number than it had been the day before. It was the biggest drop for the company in nearly 6 years. And it wiped out almost $1 billion in market value. Now, that does not mean they lost $1 billion. I see this, oh, the company lost $1 billion on Friday. Valuation, revenue, two different things. But it's still not good, because people are going to look at these stories and think the company lost $1 billion. And even to lose $1 billion in value, again, you can have a day where the stock goes down, the stock goes up. That's not good. That's not good. And this all has as much as anything to do with how vague and how sudden and just out of nowhere this announcement was. You know, maybe Vince McMahon has good reason for doing what he did. We don't know. We may never know. You know, Barrios and Wilson, they're not going to come out and do some tell-all interview. You know, if they have some kind of, you know, NDA that they sign where they can't talk, I'm sure they got a very nice severance package. We're probably not going to hear anything from them, at least not for a very long time. So it's possible we may never know the full details of exactly what went down here. But who's to say that Vince McMahon didn't have good reason for doing what he did? The thing is, until he explains his actions or gives a little more guidance on what the hell happened here, and one line in a press release is not going to get the job done, you know, in the meantime, all they're doing is creating panic and uncertainty. And so what happens? The stock falls. Now, WWE expects its full year 2019 adjusted OIBDA, which is operating income before depreciation and amortization, to be $180 million. Now, that would only be slightly ahead of last year's $179 million. That was the number I dug up. I believe that was the number from last year. But that's presumably with either TV money or Saudi money factored in. That wasn't there last year. So yeah, maybe it went up by a million, but if you factor in all this extra money that, in theory, they're getting, all of a sudden, that doesn't look so impressive. But here's a key thing to keep in mind with this. This is a very important thing I want to mention here. Yes, it is very possible that this is a sign of lower than expected earnings coming this Thursday. It is also possible that the earnings will not be as bad as some people are saying they're going to be. So if they're down, but not down by too much, I could see the stock rising. Maybe not back to, you know, I think it was at $62 before. I mean, a year ago, it was at $100. $100 a share, which was ridiculous. You talk about being overvalued. But it's very possible that if the earnings, oh, that's not as bad as we thought it might be, stock goes back up to 50-something dollars. Who knows, maybe even 60-ish. This is all being driven by uncertainty right now. The stock market does not like that, but there are some very real problems that WWE has to face. As much money as the company is bringing in from these TV deals and from the Saudi Arabia deal, all of their key metrics are down. So you can talk about all the money from Fox and all the money from NBC Universal and all the money from the Saudi Prince. All of their key metrics are down. And they cannot seem to figure out how to reverse that trend. They can't stop the bleeding. Live event attendance is down to the point now where they're actually cutting back on house shows. I just got done talking about house shows a few weeks ago, right, in the mailbag. Somebody asked me, oh, why don't they just get rid of house shows? And I made the case for why I think that would be a terrible idea. And the way to go would be just to cut back on the number of them. You don't outright just get rid of them, but you scale back on the number of house shows, and that's what they have started to do. But not because, oh my God, we have this great concern for our talent. It's because attendance is down. They're not making as much money off of these shows. The people aren't coming out to see them as much. That's down. TV ratings are down. Merchandise is down. Network subscriptions are down, or at least stagnant. They've not been able to pass that 2 million mark like they wanted too many years ago. Their new UK deal that they signed with BT Sport, I would think, I don't know that the numbers were ever made public, is probably for less than whatever Sky was paying them. They were with Sky for 30 years. So who knows if that number is lower as well. Ask yourself this. Without all of that TV money, where the hell would this company be right now? You know, not giving a $9 million contract to Edge, I can tell you that. But seriously, where would WWE be right now were it not for all of that money from Fox and all of that money from NBC Universal? It's scary to think about. So these two get kicked to the curb by Vince McMahon over a disagreement over the vision of the company moving forward. That must have been one hell of a disagreement. I would love to know what these visions were. These weren't just two random executives in the company. These are the two people who effectively would have taken over if anything ever happened to Vince McMahon. You know, if he had some kind of android malfunction, they were his number two and number three in command. So for them to be pushed out, as all of these stories claim, is a very big deal. They were the faces of the company in the business world. You know, Barrios would lead all of the investor calls. They would sometimes attend outside events and outside business conferences on behalf of the company. It wasn't Vince McMahon going around giving these speeches or you know, Linda McMahon or whatever. It was these two. I guess Linda isn't technically connected anymore to the company, but you get my point. And for all this talk about, you know, bad creative, the company has been pretty strong on the business end of things in spite of a lot of these different metrics being down. You know, and me personally, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't own any WWE stock. I've never owned any WWE stock, although now probably would be a good time to get in. Buy some shares before it goes back up. You know, buy low, sell high, as they say. I think that this company is in real trouble if things ever go south with their TV partners, and whatever credit you want to give to Barrios and Wilson and their involvement in that, and they weren't the only ones who were responsible for the, you know, the rights fees that they got. It wasn't like they just negotiated the whole deal themselves. Remember, WWE brought in an outside firm. I think it was, CAA or something. You know, they brought in a major firm, not unlike what MLW has done now, as they try to look for a TV rights deal themselves to help negotiate that for them. But these, you know, they were part of the process too. They were in the room when this happened. As much credit as you might want to give these two, they also should deserve some of the blame, along with Vince McMahon. But you know, Vince McMahon was never going to kick himself to the curb. That just wasn't going to happen. But you cannot minimize the role that these two played in this company. Now, Vince McMahon controls the company's voting power, something like 80% of it. So regardless of what the other board members want to do, that's why I love this quote in the press release. I and the board decided it was in the best interest of the company to basically get rid of these two. Regardless of what the other board members want to do. And he controls who those people are. He controls who the people are on the board. At the end of the day, what he says goes. What Vince McMahon wants, Vince McMahon gets. If he wants to get rid of somebody, I know the release says, again, it was a mutual decision with him and the board. It was a Vince McMahon call. This was a Vince McMahon decision. He wanted to make this move. There was little that the rest of the board was realistically going to do about it. What are they going to do? Fight him on it? As always, the buck stops with one man. That man is Vince McMahon. You know, when you hear me talk about the writers for Raw and for SmackDown and the product that you see on television outside of NXT, they're not writing for us. They're writing for an audience of one. And Paul Heyman's influence, it might finally be bearing some fruit on Monday nights. I say some. You know, it's going to take time. There's glimmers of hope that I see the last few weeks on Monday Night Raw. But how long before Heyman wants to do something or wants to push someone who Vince disagrees with? How long before he gets the boot, like Eric Bischoff did? It's inevitable. You know it's inevitable. You know at some point it's going to happen. Heyman's a smart guy. He can probably protect himself for a while, but it's inevitable. They play to an audience of one. It's still Vince McMahon's company. He can do what he wants, but we see a lot of faces come and go. Eric Bischoff got hired and fired so fast, it's almost like it never happened. These two got pushed out here because Vince's vision does not sync up with theirs. So, gotta go. It's always someone else's fault. It's never Vince McMahon's fault. Always someone else's fault. I've said before, you can't fire your way out of whatever problems that you're facing. You can only pass the buck so many times. One thing that we should learn on Thursday that I'm very curious about is how much WWE is getting from USA Network for airing NXT on Wednesday nights. Now, there were unconfirmed reports many months ago that had the number pegged as high as $50 million. And then I think Meltzer claimed the number was actually closer to $30 million. There are some people who think that number may actually be zero, which I find very hard to believe. I have no idea where this is coming from. But I've seen that mentioned as well. There are some people who believe that it's possible that WWE is actually getting nothing. It's getting no money at all. Other than exposure of putting NXT on USA. And if that's the case, and we'll know soon enough, you can draw your own conclusion there why NXT was moved to USA. But Thursday will tell the tale, because it would be reflected in those fourth quarter results. Even if there's no specific number listed that specifically says NXT, you know, here's the, you know, the number they're getting, they could lump it in with other revenue. It shouldn't be too hard, I wouldn't think, for people far smarter than I am to figure out how much of that money is likely coming from NXT on USA. So that's one of those things I'm curious to find out about. I mean, look, you can only read so many unconfirmed reports. This is a publicly traded company. They have to report their numbers, so it'll be in there somewhere. But all of this drama comes just 1 week before the first XFL games are being played. It is almost upon us this Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern on ABC, 5 p.m. on Fox. Teams take the field for the first XFL game. Sunday, there's two more games next Sunday on Fox and ESPN. Another money loser. This is going to be another money loser. If the XFL were to be successful, here's why I'm taking a less optimistic approach. At first, when this was announced, I tried to be nice. And I tried to give things the benefit of the doubt. And this time, Vince McMahon is spending his own money and he lessons learned from his mistakes in the past and all, right? Now that we're a week away and I look at this, I come to the realization that this is going to fail. I can't say when, I can't say how quickly it will crash, but I believe that this is going to go the way that every single one of Vince McMahon's outside wrestling projects have gone. If this were to be successful, this would be the first time that Vince McMahon has had success with a venture outside of WWE. His track record with these things is abysmal. Some people would say that his track record with wrestling in recent years is abysmal. What makes you think that he's going to be able to go out and all of a sudden create this gigantic football success? I don't see this being any different, except this time he's using his own money. He better be. He better be, because if we find out that he's siphoning money from WWE to help pay for his vanity football project, that's going to make Wall Street even less happy. The Royal Rumble last Sunday was a thumbs-up show. Two very strong Rumble matches, especially that men's Rumble. Maybe the best one they've done in years. It's been a long time since I went back and watched the Royal Rumble match a second time so soon after I saw it the first time, but I did that with this men's match. I went back the day after, and I watched the whole thing over again. And yet, I got a comment still from someone. I know it's only one idiot. The vast majority of the comments on the review and everything were positive, but my jaw dropped when I saw this one idiotic comment from somebody bashing me for never being positive about WWE. This was on the Royal Rumble review that I did. Despite my positive review of the show, I was told, "You're always so negative. Your tone here in this review was very negative." This isn't the fucking Firefly Funhouse edition of the Sound Off. I don't know what you're expecting here. I'm not doing cartwheels and pleasuring myself as I record these shows. But if I did do a Firefly Funhouse edition of the show, my word of the day for that person would be imbecile. I-M-B-E-C-I-L-E. Imbecile. Poll results. 5,700 votes on Twitter. 87% thumbs up, 13% thumbs down. Overwhelmingly positive response to this pay-per-view. Of course, the big news coming out of it, besides the Rumble winners, was that Edge has returned to the ring after a 9-year absence, a 9-year forced retirement, and it was one of the more memorable moments in Royal Rumble history. When his music hit and people lost their minds and he came out, 46 years old, he looks great, he let his hair grow long again. You know, obviously he looks a little bit older, a little bit grayer in the beard. Some, as he said on TV, some crow's feet under his eyes. He's 46 years old. Okay, he's almost a decade older than the last time we saw him come out for a match. So yes, he's going to look older. But I thought he looked great. And, you know, WrestleVotes on Twitter was the first to report that he had signed a 3-year deal with the company for what they claimed was significant money. And then WrestleZone and Pro Wrestling Sheet both reported that the talks with Edge and WWE on a new deal came only after he had already opened up discussions with All Elite Wrestling about coming in. Fancy that. Fancy that. He began dialogue with both promotions back in August, and AEW reportedly made an offer for him to work there in a backstage role, maybe like an agent or a producer, and to wrestle a handful of matches. I guess they were satisfied that he had passed independent tests from his doctors saying that he could come back. It was safe for him to come back. Before this, Vince McMahon, you know, had no interest in allowing Edge back into the ring. All of a sudden, their tune changed. And wouldn't you know, Edge was magically cleared by WWE doctors. And according to the WrestleZone report, they had a ring shipped to his home in North Carolina so that he could train and get his timing down. It's awfully convenient that now, after 9 years, he gets cleared by their doctors after being told they would never clear him to wrestle again. That's it. You're done. You have no choice. Remember what he said in his retirement speech? I've been told I have no choice. I've got no choice. This was not a choice that he made. He was forced into retirement. And almost a decade has now gone by. Now, he probably never had any intention, I'm thinking, in going to AEW, would be my guess. But I saw that Alex McCarthy of TalkSport, he was the first to report the details of the deal, said the deal is for 3 years at $3 million per year. That's a $9 million contract. I think that's the same deal that Bret Hart got when he signed with WCW, when WCW was throwing money around left and right. Now, what happened, per the Observer, is that Edge took the offer that he got from AEW, and he used it to get WWE to give him the same deal. He used it as leverage. to negotiate the same exact deal from WWE. He said, look, they're offering me $3 million a year with the idea that I would start right around the time that Dynamite was going to be debuting on TNT, which was a few months later. And thus, he ends up with one of the biggest deals ever offered in WWE history. It's not a full-time deal, but it's said to be for more than just the five matches per year, or what was the number, 25 appearances total was the number that was floating around. It's said to be for more than that. If they're throwing around that much money at this guy per year, you know there's some sweet Saudi money involved here. And there'll be some sweet Saudi matches in Edge's future. But let me get this straight. I can't get around this point. Daniel Bryan is told, you will never be cleared to wrestle again because it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous. You've had a number of concussions. You admitted to us, which was his downfall when he admitted this. I mean, good on him for being honest, but this is what screwed him, is when, you know, he and Bree told them that he had suffered the seizure that one time, that he had seizures, or it was just one time. But the company looked at this and his track record of all the concussions he had going back to his indie days and said that that's it. It's too dangerous for you to wrestle. And it's, you know, a liability for us and all that. And that's it. So Bryan is forced, like Edge was, into a retirement that he did not want any part of. Almost 3 years go by. He's made it very clear at this point to the company that I'm going to wrestle, even if I have to do it somewhere else. I will leave. I will let my deal lapse. He was in the last year of his contract at the time. And he made no bones about the fact that I will leave. I want to work a mask match in Mexico. He probably would have gone to Japan. You know, maybe he would have done Evolve. Maybe he would have done Ring of Honor. Maybe he would have eventually ended up in an AEW, which didn't exist at the time. But he was going to leave. All of a sudden, they're open. You know, he makes one last-ditch effort. And they're more open to things, and poof, he gets cleared by WWE and re-signs with the company. He never would have re-signed with the company if they didn't clear him to wrestle. That is there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He would not have re-signed with this company if he knew they are not going to let me wrestle. And I even said at the time, I said, look, if that's so important to him, I hope for his sake, if he's going to re-sign with them, he has a stipulation or a provision inserted into the contract that protects him. Because what's to stop them from, you know, re-signing him, and then all of a sudden they turn around and say, oh, you know what, we saw something we didn't like, so you're no longer cleared. Psych. I said, I hope you put something in the contract that prevents that from happening. Because he was adamant that he was going to wrestle again. And when he threatened to leave, all of a sudden, Daniel Bryan is cleared. The world rejoices and he's allowed back in the ring. Edge. Edge is told he'll never be cleared again. 9 years go by. He says on his podcast last summer, he makes a comment, oh, I think I could probably do at least one more match. He starts talking to AEW about a deal. And lo and behold, WWE clears him to wrestle and he signs a new deal with them just like Daniel Bryan did. An interesting pattern may be developing here. Those Sting rumors may turn out to be true after all. There's rumors that Sting could be cleared to wrestle on the next Saudi Arabia show, although it wouldn't be against The Undertaker, supposedly. I think the way to go, if there's any truth to this whatsoever, first of all, I don't have any interest at this point in seeing Sting or The Undertaker back in the ring. I think they should stay out of the ring. But that's not my choice. If they're going to do something, I think the way to go would be to team them up. As an attraction and a tag team match on one of these Saudi shows, you put them together as a tag team against a team like Corbin and Ziggler. Dolph would bump his ass off of those two. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we can no longer take for granted after all of this news that Sting will never be cleared to wrestle a match because they said the same thing about Daniel Bryan. They said the same thing about Edge. And that turned out not to be the case. Paige. All of these people, all of a sudden, there's severe doubt cast on whether or not they will, in fact, one day be allowed back in a ring in WWE. Sting should be on the phone to Tony Khan right now. And then he can run to Vince McMahon and say, hey, look what they offered me. Watch how quickly he gets cleared. Give me the Undertaker. That's his only stipulation. Give me the Undertaker. I feel like Sting goes to bed at night dreaming about The Undertaker. The way he still talks in these interviews about wanting to work with him, it's like, dude, But if they did, I say do a tag team match. That way you get the cool visual of the two of them in the ring together. And that's really the biggest thing you could do with them at this point. It's the entrances, it's the visual. Once the bell rings, it all falls apart. You don't want that. So you get them in the ring together, side by side as a tag team. They get a win, the lights go out, the blue light comes on, they pose, Undertaker does his little kneel-down salute thing, Sting holds up the bat. That's all people want to see. And that way they don't have to completely embarrass themselves. But back to Edge. Kevin Dunn. Appropriate that I should mention him here on Groundhog Day. His crack production team missed the first spear that Edge gave to Dolph Ziggler at the Royal Rumble. The first spear that Edge has delivered, not counting the one to Elias on the SummerSlam kickoff. That was not a match. The first official spear that he has delivered in 9 years. And what do? They cut to a shot of the crowd just as he is sliding into the ring. Dolph was not happy about that either. He was very vocal about it on Twitter. He said that was a special moment for him. Look, I mean, Edge is somebody that he looked up to. Edge is somebody who he has sang his praises before. They worked together. They had that Royal Rumble, you know, championship match at one of the Rumble pay-per-views many, many years ago. It was pivotal in Dolph's career. So that was a big moment for him to have this guy come back, this mentor, this old friend of his, and he wanted to make it special, and they cut away from it on TV. And he went on Twitter and he said, you know, look, if anybody has any fan cam footage, you know, let me know, please share it. Now, WWE, they have since released alternate footage of it online. Of course, they had the footage, the alternate camera angle footage, the correct footage. They did put that out there, but they get in their own way with these things. They're too fancy for their own good with these camera shots. The constant crowd reaction shots. This is, you know what this is? This is the product of the streak ending at WrestleMania 30 with all of those reaction shots, the great reaction shots when the match was over. But that was when the match was over. We didn't miss any big moments because of it. It would be like Brock giving Undertaker the F5 and hooking the leg. And at the two count, they cut to a shot of me in the Superdome that night looking at my phone. Then they cut back and the streak is over. Why would you do that? The camera cuts, the zooms, the shaky cam, it doesn't make the shows better, just the opposite. It makes the shows worse. How do they not realize this? AJ Styles, he confirmed that he separated his left shoulder, taking that exaggerated bump for Edge's spear when they came face to face. In the Rumble match, he was streaming on Mixer. AJ's a big gamer. So he was on Mixer and he was streaming and he took full responsibility for what happened. He was very, very adamant that this was not Edge's fault. This was all on me. He just wanted to make it look really good. He said, it's 100% on me. They wanted to get him out of there right away. The referees did. He said, no, it's the Royal Rumble match. I can't go out under the bottom rope. Somebody has to throw me out, which he went to Edge and said, look, throw me out. I'm sure it didn't feel too good. Guy has a separated shoulder and he's being thrown out over the top rope. But that's what Edge did. He threw him out. And I knew right away, it was very awkward. I even said this during my live stream review. I said, something happened here. Either it just wasn't supposed to happen or he was hurt. Because, you know, AJ's a pretty big name and he just sort of went out in this very anticlimactic moment. It just felt like, and even Carl Anderson was kind of looking down at AJ when he got dumped out, like, huh, okay, like he wasn't expecting that to happen. So it was clear something bad happened. He doesn't think he's going to be out very long. He's hopeful he'll be back for WrestleMania, although he said it was a lot more swollen, you know, when he was talking about it. He said, it is a lot more swollen than it was before, he said, which is kind of odd. But he said he's had this injury once before. You know, he took a similar bump against Roman Reigns, possibly off the same move. I'm not sure what the WrestleMania match for AJ even is, now that they have seemingly abandoned his program with Randy Orton, with Orton going heel, now he's going to feud with Edge. I mean, they could always insert AJ into it, and they can play off the fact that he got hurt taking the spear from Edge at the Royal Rumble. He comes back, he wants a piece of Edge for revenge. I think it should just be kept one-on-one. I would not... Look, you put AJ Styles in anything, I'm sure it'll be a great match. But I think you got to keep that one-on-one for Mania with Edge and Orton. Maybe AJ and Aleister Black. I think that could be a fun match. Are they going to have enough time to kickstart that program between now and WrestleMania? That depends on how quickly AJ can come back. But I think AJ and Black could be a fun match at WrestleMania. Charlotte Flair won her first Women's Royal Rumble. And Drew McIntyre won his first Men's Royal Rumble. So two fresh, and I know that sounds weird, Charlotte Flair fresh, but fresh winners. People who have not won the Rumble match before got Rumble wins last Sunday. And Drew McIntyre eliminated Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns en route to his victory. Having Brock in the Rumble, I said weeks ago when this was first announced on Raw, it was a great idea. A lot of people were shitting on it at the time, and I said, I did a whole segment on this. I said, I don't know why people are so bent out of shape and are crapping all over this idea. I think it's a great idea. I think it makes the Rumble much more interesting. And it did. And him dumping out 13 people, I know that pissed off a lot of fans, but it made that Claymore kick mean so much more. When Drew finally kicked him out over the top rope, they got that wide shot, they panned back, an actual great crowd shot they got. They panned back, the people were going nuts. They were jumping up and down, they were so happy to see McIntyre kick this guy's head off and knock him out of the ring. You know, when they panned back and showed that crowd shot, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, like, the hometown soccer team having just scored a goal. And actually, that would have been pretty funny if you would have had Michael Cole on commentary just screaming, "Goal!" Probably would have been annoying, just like that was. But I think that would have been kind of humorous. You know, the stories that Brock told just through his facial expressions when some of these people walked out. Keith Lee, one of the few people that Lesnar did not dump out right away, although he ultimately did dump him out. The look on Brock's face when he came out was great. He looked at Heyman, he's like, oh, who's this big boy? And then the shoulder tackle, Lee knocked him down, place went nuts, the stadium lit up. I thought that was great. Even the stuff with Brock and Shelton Benjamin, the hug, the acknowledgement, Brock is all smiles. Hey, like he just met his old friend, his old pal. The acknowledgement of their history together, and then, of course, Brock turned on him. And Booker T is talking about Shelton like, you know, what an idiot. How did he not see that coming? I loved those little moments, though, in that Rumble match, although I'm still bitter that they had Cesaro in the ring with him for all of 10 seconds. I think that is just a colossal waste. After all these years, what a waste of a spot that was. Other than that, I thought they did a masterful job in using Brock Lesnar in this match. The longest Brock Lesnar has been in the ring since he came back in 2012. He lasted 26 minutes. He's appeared in two other Rumble matches since his return, in 2016 and 2017. He didn't last 10 minutes in either one of those matches. So we got more Brock here than we normally would in the span of 6 months. But they finally pulled the trigger on McIntyre. He either gets over now or he never gets over. This is it. Sink or swim. They're giving him the chance. He is being given the ball to run with here. And he seems to be getting a little more over each week as a babyface. Now, John Cena, who was not in the Royal Rumble match, he watched the Rumble at home, he said. He gave an interview to Sports Illustrated, and he opined that Brock Lesnar is the greatest in-ring performer of all time. This is what he said. He said, I can say with the utmost sincerity that I believe Brock Lesnar is the best in-ring performer that I have seen, and I know it's an opinion, and if you want a cool quote, here it is. I think he's the best in-ring performer of all time. I thought his performance at the Rumble was a clinic on how to establish yourself, how to establish those around you, establish the championship, establish the importance of one event. He did so in less than 30 minutes. And I certainly don't have the skill set to do that, and it was awesome to be able to see as a masterclass. The man put on a clinic on what to do and how to do it, and I was really impressed with the Rumble. And the interview, you know, the interviewer pressed him on the point and said, so wait, you're saying that Brock is the best ever? And Cena said, I really do think so. I genuinely think that he has a good understanding of who he is. I think he's the best at what needs to be done as far as having a mystique that will draw eyeballs to watch him. And when he does, he never disappoints. He believes so much in his presence and he has such a definable presence. You can't ignore him. He never wastes anyone's time. And everything he does is so special, and everything he does is meaningful. It's not at all selfish. He's one of the most giving performers in WWE, and that is the mark of a true craftsman and a professional. Now, this is Cena's opinion. It is a very subjective thing. I just did a feature a few weeks ago on my top five wrestlers of the decade a few weeks ago. And Brock Lesnar was my number one pick for wrestler of the decade in WWE. Overall, I had Tanahashi and Okada ahead of him. But in WWE, there was no one more dominant, not just in terms of how he was booked on TV. I mean, anybody can be dominant on TV. You know, I could sign a contract with WWE, and if I have a friend who is writing the show, he can book me to win all my matches too. I mean, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but I'm not just talking in terms of that, but in terms of how everything in the company revolved around this guy for much of the decade. He came in 2012, he came back, and almost the entire time that he spent in that company, more so in after the first, I'd say, couple of years, but everything just revolved around this guy. He was sort of the gatekeeper. He was like the final boss. He was the man. He was booked to be just so much more important than everybody else there the entire time. So he worked with all the key guys. He worked with some of the younger guys, some of the biggest matches, some of the biggest moments all involved Brock Lesnar. And in them, yeah, some matches were disappointing because they were so quick, but there were some great matches. He does not get enough credit from people. In the second half of his career, he has some great matches in the first half, but even the second half of his career, people just, oh, he's, you know, he's got a big gut and he barely shows up and he's sweating and he's slow and he's plodding, and I hear all this stuff about him. If anything, I think he's underrated in terms of a lot of the matches that he has had. You know, the big fight feel to everything that he does. People stop what they're doing and they pay attention when he comes out. And he's face-to-face, nose-to-nose with somebody, especially if he's in there with somebody new that he's never been in the ring with before. Big guy, small guy, doesn't matter. People are curious. How's this going to go? You know, are they going to work well together? Are they going to be able to hang with this guy? Is he going to give them anything? Is he just going to suplex them? How's this going to go? You know, how's Brock going to react to all this? You going to bump for the guy? Everything about him defined that last decade in WWE. Now, to call him the greatest in-ring performer of all time, in a world where Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Ric Flair and Kurt Angle exist, again, we're talking in-ring now. Best of all time is debatable to me, but I think he's absolutely in that conversation. Matt Riddle, speaking of other people, everything revolving around Lesnar, Matt Riddle made a cameo in the Royal Rumble. He only lasted a whopping 40 seconds before being dumped out by Baron Corbin. It's been reported that he had a run-in with Brock Lesnar backstage at the Rumble. Riddle's been calling this guy out for years. He's been saying he's going to be the man to retire Brock Lesnar. He's also been very vocal in the past about how much he thinks Bill Goldberg sucks, even back to his WCW days. He said he was never a fan of Goldberg. He does not mince words when he talks about Goldberg. And Goldberg actually had a backstage run-in of his own with Riddle at SummerSlam last year, where Goldberg told him, "I'm not your bro." Remember that whole thing? Riddle was trying to be very nice and saying, "Oh, bro." He's like, "I'm not your bro." And remember, Brock Lesnar is very good friends, by all accounts, with Bill Goldberg. So who knows how much of, assuming any of this is real, who knows how much of Brock's opinion is influenced by that. But supposedly, as the story goes, and different websites, including some reputable ones, were confirming this when it was first reported, Lesnar saw Riddle in the back. He grabbed his shoulder to get his attention, and Brock told him, "Kid, you may as well stop saying my name and tagging me and shit, because you and I will never work together. Ever." And upon reading that the first time, my heart sank. My hopes were dashed. I've been crowing about this match now for months. So my hopes were dashed. All hope was lost. Until I saw the WWE uploaded a video on their YouTube channel with Matt Riddle backstage at the Rumble, before the match and after the match, still talking about how he wants to face Brock Lesnar and that he's going to face Lesnar at some point. And I realize, we've been worked, bro. This match is totally going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if. Also, the idea of Brock Lesnar telling people, stop tagging me and stuff. Does anybody actually believe that Brock Lesnar uses social media or runs his Twitter page? He has a Twitter account. He's got the blue check mark and everything. But do you honestly believe that he's running the account? He's browsing Twitter on his phone? All his Twitter account does anyway is just retweet Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's probably running both of them. He's probably running his own and Brock's account. I can't even see Brock doing that, just retweeting Heyman. I can't even picture that. So the idea that he would be upset, and he finally has this confrontation with Riddle, and he goes out of his way to mention that he's been tagging him and stuff, is laughable. Maybe Brock's on Snapchat or something. Who knows? But I know Riddle is his own worst enemy. But I like that he's trying to make his own opportunities. I like that the guy has his own personality. I know it rubs people the wrong way, but he's got his own personality. And the match is just too good to pass up. Do the damn match. Doesn't have to be right now. It's still early. Riddle's not even on Raw or SmackDown. Do the damn match. Later this year, next year, I don't care when. But they need to make this match happen at some point, and I do believe it will happen. Some New Japan news. Kota Ibushi has been off of these New Beginning tour shows after being diagnosed with Mallory Weiss syndrome, which is a condition marked by a tear in the mucous membrane or the inner lining of the esophagus where it meets the stomach. Most tears heal within 7 to 10 days without treatment, but tears can cause significant bleeding. And depending on the severity of the tear, surgery may be necessary to repair the damage. So apparently Ibushi's been very sick. He's been very ill. This is what he was diagnosed with. It probably will just resolve on its own if it hasn't already. But he was removed from a lot of the shows that he had been scheduled for. And I wonder, you know, originally the reports were that he was really sick. He might have the flu. You know, when you have the flu, I've been fortunate. I've never had the flu and I've never had a flu shot. But when you are sick like that, you know, you're probably vomiting a lot. And I wonder if he really was that sick, could that have caused it? You know, because they say a lot of vomiting can cause it. Maybe he took a chest bump. Maybe he took a really wicked chop to the chest or some kind of bump and that caused it. I'd never even heard of this syndrome before. So I start reading up on, like, what is this? And I'm reading up on it and it's like, wow, you know, that's kind of strange. So hopefully he'll be okay. Apparently he has told them that he will be okay for the big show in Osaka next Sunday, which I'll talk about in a second. But in other news, and there are some spoiler results involved here for some of the shows in recent days, so if you do not want to be spoiled, if you are very sensitive to spoilers, then you can skip ahead. The Gorillas of Destiny, G.O.D., Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, once again are the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions for the 6th time, having beaten Juice Robinson and David Finlay, the team of Finjuice, on the New Beginning Tour in Atlanta the other night. That ends their reign at less than a month. 28 days. They enjoyed those tag team titles, and G.O.D. are the champions again. Meanwhile, I did catch part of the New Beginning in Sapporo show from night one, the last two matches. Tomohiro Ishii beat Evil in a very good match. They did a whole series of you know, finisher teases and reversals back and forth. Ishii hit two lariats, and in the end, he hit his brainbuster for the win. And the NEVER Openweight title was on the line. Shingo Takagi challenging the champion, the new champion, Hirooki Goto. Goto blocked the Last of the Dragon, got a near fall, went to hit a penalty kick, headbutts back and forth. Goto, whole bunch of headbutts, hits an inverted GTR. Went for another one, but Shingo blocked it and hit the Made in Japan for a near fall. I like that move. I hold my breath, hoping the guy tucks his head in time, because that could end very badly, but it's a cool move. And then he hit Last of the Dragon, got the pin finally to win the championship. Another very good match. Shingo Takagi wins his first singles title in New Japan. I don't know if that means Ishii might challenge him next, given his win over Evil. I guess we'll see, but these were two very good matches. And next Sunday, the 9th, is the big Osaka show, which I do hope to watch, and I do hope to have some kind of review for, if not on the main podcast, maybe on YouTube. Tetsuya Naito defends both of his championships, the IWGP title and the Intercontinental title, against Kenta. John Moxley defends the United States Championship against Minoru Suzuki, the match I am looking forward to the most. They got into it this weekend on some of these shows. Moxley, in fact, on the show overnight, I didn't get to see anything other than this one clip so far, but Moxley was entering for his tag team match through the crowd, and Suzuki was on the opposing team. He didn't want to wait, so he went into the crowd to meet Moxley halfway. They were brawling all over the crowd. It was craziness that you would expect from these two. And so they'll go one-on-one next Sunday. Hiromu Takahashi defends his junior heavyweight title against Ryu Lee. And Jay White goes one-on-one against Sanada. And then, of course, they'll have a whole series of undercard matches. Jay White, by the way, will challenge Marty Scurll, who showed up unannounced at the New Beginning show in Durham, North Carolina, to challenge White for a match at the Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor show in Lakeland, Florida, over WrestleMania weekend. There will be a whole bunch of New Japan talents on that show, including Will Ospreay. As a sign of the renewed alliance between Ring of Honor and New Japan that looked like it might be dying a death, apparently it has gotten a new lease on life, thanks in part to Marty Scurll, serving as this sort of bridge now between the two companies. But the Osaka show next week should be very good, and I am looking forward to that. Monday Night Raw was live from San Antonio, Texas, which, according to Jerry the King Lawler, is the hometown of Rey Mysterio. Apparently, the new area code for San Antonio is 619. And yet, Vic Joseph is the one out of a job. Go figure. Over 3,000 votes in the Twitter poll, 70% thumbs up, 30% thumbs down. So I don't want to hear from people anymore that Raw never gets a positive score in these polls. It's rigged. It's fake news. I don't want to hear this nonsense anymore. When there is a reason to get a positive score, the show will get it. And wouldn't you know, this was a better than usual show this week. By no means a perfect show. And they got a positive score. That's how it works. People get so bent out of shape. Why does Raw always get a negative? Because Raw sucked. That's why it got a negative score. All the excuses that people would make, I don't think that's accurate, I think people are just voting thumbs down out of habit. Yeah, but not to the tune of 2,500, 3,500 votes. But the show was better this week, and wouldn't you know, 70-30, that's a pretty, affirmative score there. People enjoyed the show this week on the whole. Now, Vic Joseph is still employed by WWE. I didn't want to imply before that he was fired. But he has lost his gig as the voice of Monday Night Raw after less than 4 months. We are back to a three-man booth with Tom Phillips replacing Joseph, joining Jerry Lawler, and Byron Saxton is back as well. I like Tom. I like Tom Phillips. I think he's a good announcer. He got the shaft when Cole and Graves were handpicked by Fox to take over on SmackDown. He was banished to NXT UK. The spot really should have gone to him anyway, so I think it's a good move. Drew McIntyre did not waste any time in announcing the champion that he would be facing at WrestleMania. It is Bork Laser. He will be challenging him for the championship. And then he went and beat Anderson and Gallows, the supposed best tag team in the world. 2-on-1 in 2 minutes. Bork slid into the ring and laid out Drew with an F5, so we're off to the races as far as WrestleMania goes. MVP against Rey Mysterio. Poor MVP. Nobody was talking about his return at the Royal Rumble once Edge came out. But he was never that big of a star anyways. Compared to Edge, he certainly wasn't. His return came about because of a conversation with Paul Heyman. He was in and out of the Rumble in seconds last Sunday. This match here, this was his swan song. He went on Instagram. He said this was his final WWE match. He wanted to come back like Bill Goldberg did because he has a young son now who never saw him wrestle. He never saw him wrestle live. God, I hope Great Khali never has any kids. This match with Rey Mysterio was by his request. Mysterio is his son's favorite wrestler, which is kind of funny, right? His father is a wrestler, but Rey is his favorite. But I guess if his son is young enough and he never saw dad wrestle, then I guess dad wouldn't be his favorite. So it kind of makes sense. He lost, as he should have, There was one awkward spot near the finish where Ray went for the 619. It looked like MVP was trying to avoid it, so he kind of pulled away, but Ray partially kicked him in the back anyway as he tried to get out of the way. Jerry Lawler called this one of the best 619s he had ever seen. And on a related note, we now know that Jerry Lawler has never seen a 619 before. Samoa Joe was injured. How many times have you heard me say that here on this show? Samoa Joe is injured on a dive out of the ring onto Buddy Murphy in the tag team title match with Joe and Kevin Owens against Rollins and Murphy, which Rollins and Murphy won. They are still the tag team champions. Joe landed awkwardly on the dive. He suffered a concussion. They pulled him out of the match, you know, and so it turned into a handicap match. And yet another injury for Samoa Joe. It's just one after the other after the other. I hate to say it, but, you know, it's to the point now where if I'm the company, how do I trust his body not to fall apart? Or how do I trust some other fluky thing not to happen before WrestleMania? When I'm thinking about what to do with him at WrestleMania, I'm not putting him in any kind of a real feature match because I can't be sure that he's going to be able to hold up. I mean, this is really getting ridiculous. Now, look, concussions happen. It was a fluky thing. He's done that dive in every match he's ever had. I don't know that he's ever suffered a concussion on that tope through the ropes. But how many more times is he going to get hurt? I mean, it seems like he's just had the worst luck. Becky Lynch is now walking around with a jacket that says GOAT on the back with a picture of an actual goat. Andrade, again, defended the United States Championship against Humberto Carrillo, despite Carrillo's loss the night before at the Royal Rumble. And then we learned that Andrade has been suspended for 30 days for his first violation of the WWE wellness policy. He is already back in Mexico. WWE only learned of the suspension Monday morning, and so they had to rewrite the show for that night. They were not planning on rematching the two of them, because why would they? Carrillo lost fair and square the night before. Why the hell would he get another championship match? He did anyway. That their plan was, let's just put the two of them back in the ring. And then they did a disqualification finish with Carrillo giving him a DDT on the exposed concrete like Andrade did to him about a month ago. So that was a Paul Heyman call to not take the title off of Andrade. So that means the championship is on ice for 30 days. I would not have put the title on Carrillo either. He's not over enough to justify that. So I agree with not putting the championship on him. Maybe he'll get there at some point. He's not there yet. But since WWE doesn't announce what the talent fails for, this does not mean that Andrade took a banned substance. He could have just missed the scheduled test, or maybe he did test for something, but maybe it was something that he had a legitimate prescription for and it lapsed. They do their talents a real disservice by not sharing that information. Because guys in some cases may be unfairly painted as drug users, drug abusers, when that may not be the case at all. You know, in Andrade's case, we don't know. We may never know. On the other hand, you probably have some guys who do things they shouldn't, who are very happy that that information never comes out. But unfortunately, the guys who really, you know, through no fault of their own, get popped for one reason or another. It could be a technicality. They just get lumped in. Oh, well, what was he doing? You know, he did steroids, or he did this, he did that. And I just don't think that's fair to them. So we had Mrs. Andrade was out next to point to the WrestleMania sign, or to communicate with her home planet, I'm not sure which. Charlotte teased a decision on which title she would challenge for at WrestleMania, and then she just said that she would be challenging for a championship. And she was still making up her mind. It's not going to be Bayley, and I hope it's not Becky, which would leave one option. And that's Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's Championship. They have a history. Rhea has scored a pinfall win over Charlotte on SmackDown back during the build-up to Survivor Series. Remember they had that triple threat match? It was Charlotte, it was Rhea, it was Sasha Banks. I could not remember the other night if there was a match. I was reminded that there was, and then I had forgotten that I actually thought that was a clever finish at the time when they did it. It was a very unique pinfall where Charlotte had Sasha in the figure eight into the bridge. Rhea snuck in underneath Charlotte and basically crucifixed her shoulders to the mat, all the while Sasha's legs were trapped in the submission. She couldn't go anywhere. And Rhea got the pin. Now, I am not sold on this being a good idea for Rhea Ripley. On the one hand, it does get her her first WrestleMania match. It gets her a ton of exposure. Biggest match of her career, easily, if it happens. On the other hand, I could see Charlotte winning the championship and working on NXT. If they're this desperate to try to, you know, pop some ratings and build some momentum against AEW on Wednesdays, because they keep getting their asses kicked every week. Except for a few weeks, AEW has just dominated every single week. You know, it's getting boring now when the numbers come in. If they are adamant about trying to change that, one of the things that helped them in the lead-up to Survivor Series, and won them, I think, 1 or 2 weeks worth of numbers, was having main roster talent on the show. We saw AJ Styles on the show. We had a few different main roster people, Becky Lynch, pop up on NXT. And so I could envision a situation where they say, you know, why don't we take Charlotte? Charlotte is our biggest female, or our second biggest behind Becky, female star. She could add real star power. She'll have new people to work with. We'll put the championship on her. It'll be a kind of a different idea. I'm not even saying that it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea because Rhea Ripley is the champion right now. If almost anybody else was the champion, I probably wouldn't mind it so much. But Rhea has real momentum right now. And I think to take the title off of her and have Charlotte beat her at WrestleMania, I just think would be a bad move. I think it would be a bad idea. But I could see that. I could see them saying, it's got to be killing them that NXT barely cracks the top 50 shows on cable every week. You know it's got to be killing them. So I think there's arguments for it. There's arguments against it. I just want them to do right by Rhea. I think that she is the star to build that division around in the future. She's got a good thing going right now. You know, NXT is not a priority for Vince McMahon. It's just not. So that worries me. There's pros and cons to the idea. I am keeping an open mind. We didn't get any guidance one way or the other. Charlotte was not on NXT this week, so it remains to be seen if they're going to do the match or not. It may end up being the most compelling one, because I got to tell you, if the options are Rhea, Becky, or Bayley, by default, I have to go with Rhea, because the other two matches just do not interest or excite me at all. Asuka and Kairi Sane interrupted Charlotte. Asuka has one of the best channels on YouTube, by the way. If you've never seen it, go check it out. She has a whole bunch of just wacky, like, Japanese gaming videos, and she's just the best on that channel. I like this match a lot, too. Charlotte and Asuka, they went one-on-one. They always work well together. Thank God they did not have Asuka tap out two nights in a row. Kairi dropped an insane elbow on Charlotte with Asuka trapped in the figure eight for the DQ. Charlotte made her own comeback after on both women, chased the champions away. I really hope we're not getting Charlotte against the tag team champions 2-on-1 for those titles. I know they probably want to put all the belts on Charlotte, but that would be disgusting if they did that. We got another terrible segment with the street narrators backstage. Kelly Kelly showed up. Angelo Dawkins was very happy to see her, I'll bet. I said on Twitter, you know, hey fam, these Street Profits segments are garbage. And the people largely agreed with me, but the people who disagreed with me said, well, they're more charismatic than 75% of their roster. As if that is some sort of argument against how awful these segments are. You can be charismatic and be stuck doing shitty comedy segments on TV. You can have both of those things be true. These segments are terrible. And the Weekend Update SNL knockoff segments are even worse. They've done two or three of those now. Those are also terrible. Mojo Rawley is the 24/7 champion. He now has Riddick Moss from NXT as one of his offensive linemen. Lackey, call him whatever you want. Liv Morgan pinned Lana in 2 minutes with a flatliner. This whole storyline flatlined from the moment it was conceived of. And the show ended with a fantastic segment involving Edge and Randy Orton. You look at the ending of this show and look at the ending of SmackDown this week. You talk about the tale of two cities. Edge was out to make a speech after his big Royal Rumble return. He said 9 years ago, I was medically disqualified from ever doing this again, and over the years, I started to feel pretty good, and I said to myself, what if? What if I came back? What if I came home? So he got into the best shape of his life at 46, and he wanted to end his career on his terms. I don't know how long this is going to last, he says. Oh, I'd say at least 3 years. Sounds about right. Randy Orton came out. He hugged his old friend. Orton said that he had a self-destructive personality, especially when he was younger, which is true. Hey, remember, don't forget the storyline. He has IED. Remember, IED disorder. I don't remember what that stands for, but it's pretty bad. Randy Orton's got it. But there was one guy, or what does IED stand for with the storyline they did? Impulsive, explosive disorder, or something like that. But there was one guy who pulled him out of that hole, he said, and that was Edge. And Orton welcomed him home, and Edge looked like he was on the verge of tears. And Orton heard Edge saying, you know, what if? And he asked him, he said, what if Rated RKO got together one more time? And the crowd erupted in yes chants. This was like when Triple H was teasing that we're going to get DX back together, and then he gave Shawn Michaels a pedigree. And it led to their SummerSlam match in 2002. So Orton dropped him with an RKO. Edge grabbed the back of his head, and Orton hit him in the back with a chair. Edge was moaning. I mean, the way he sold this was just pitch perfect. Orton placed Edge's head inside of a chair. He was going to pillmanize his head and his neck, and he went up to the middle rope. He had second thoughts, though. He stepped down. He left the ring. Then he ran back down, grabbed two chairs. Gave Edge a concerto. This got great heat. People were very upset by this. This was just a great angle to end the show and set up their eventual WrestleMania match. And it got me thinking, what other potential matches for Edge have you excited? There's a whole roster of guys he's never wrestled before. You know, him and Orton have a history, but, you know, well, who are the other guys that you would like to see Edge get in the ring with and have a big pay-per-view match with? You know, AJ Styles is an obvious one. Daniel Bryan. I think him and Daniel Bryan getting in the ring at some point. Almost everybody is really a new face there for him to work with. You know, but with Orton, they have a history together. They can play off of it. It'll be a good win for Edge to set him up for future opponents. And I think AJ is the next logical opponent after WrestleMania for him. And I don't know if they want to hold off until SummerSlam for that. Or I don't know, when is Money in the Bank? If Money in the Bank is in the middle there, maybe they could do it on that show, but he's got a whole bunch of different people now that he can work with who he has never stepped in the ring with before. Now, I tweeted out a question on Tuesday. I asked you if you would want to see Triple H have a match at WrestleMania this year. He has one every year. He's got the fancy entrance. It ends up being the longest match on the entire show. He's had the longest match on the show every year since WrestleMania 33 in Orlando against Seth Rollins. And if you go back even earlier than that, I think all but maybe one WrestleMania show. I believe all but one. Going all the way back to 27 against The Undertaker. And a lot of those matches, to be fair, had good stories around them. And you could argue that they should have been given a lot of time. The end of an era stuff with The Undertaker. The authority angle with Daniel Bryan to open the show at WrestleMania 30. I thought the mixed tag at 34 with him and Stephanie against Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey was the best match on the entire show. I thought that match was excellent. Everything else has been just like, eh, meh. That's been my attitude about Triple H matches. He never should have been Sting's opponent. That still eats at my craw. The match with Reigns at WrestleMania 32 sucked. The match with Rollins was a total snooze fest. Such a bore. But he's had some good stories. This year, there is no obvious Triple H match. There is no story. I don't think we need a Triple H match on the show. I don't care to see a Triple H match at WrestleMania. And like The Undertaker last year, who no-showed the event and did not have a match, I see no harm in Triple H missing a year. But I asked the question, and the response was overwhelming. Over 5,500 votes, more than 200 comments. I went through all of them. 22% of you said yes, you would like to see him have a WrestleMania match. 78% of you said, hell no, he should not have a WrestleMania match. So we're all in agreement on this. If there was an obvious opponent and an obvious story, then maybe. Okay, possibly. I mean, again, I haven't really been impressed by his matches in a while now. But there's nothing. It would just feel like he's being shoehorned in to get the obligatory Triple H match in there and take up time on a show that, you know, these shows get longer and longer. We don't need 35 minutes from entrance to the final bell of Triple H matches at WrestleMania. But if he was to wrestle, some of the names that you guys floated as potential opponents that would be of interest to you, the one that kept coming up the most was CM Punk. Now, that will never happen, I don't think. But yeah, there certainly would be a lot of real-life history there to draw from. I mean, they have an in-ring history as well. But that was going to be the WrestleMania match before Punk walked out of the company. And there have been a lot of things said over the years. So yes, if you draw off of their history together, that could be a very interesting match. The Rock. You know, I said that I would have loved to have seen The Rock and Triple H at WrestleMania 32. That was the match they were going to do. Triple H has said it. That was the match that was originally scheduled for WrestleMania that year. And The Rock just couldn't do it. He made an appearance, but he couldn't. Actually, he had a match, technically. He did have a match against Eric Rowan. But, you know, the build and the big match, he couldn't do it. So it never happened. I would not have minded to see one last Rock Triple H match. I was a big fan of their feud many years ago. Those are the two guys who really carried the company when Austin went down with a neck injury. It was The Rock, but it was also Triple H. You know, they're both guys around the same age, kind of. I think Triple H is older, I believe. But, you know, they came up around the same time. They were shooting for the same spot. There was a lot of, you know, just a lot of competition between them. And I have no doubt in my mind that Triple H was very jealous of The Rock. Might still be. You know, he's very magnanimous towards him now when they interact on social media. I think that could have been a fun final match for them to have. Shane McMahon is another name some people mentioned. I pitched a whole idea last year after Shane McMahon came back for a WrestleMania match for control of the company. Triple H against Shane. Shane very upset that Triple H married into the family and kind of, you know, passed him in the order of succession that he thought one day he would inherit the throne. And then here comes the King of Kings to take his crown. And he's harbored ill will towards him after all these years. And you could have had, you know, maybe Shane is like a Vince surrogate or, you know, something for control of the company that would get the McMahons out of there. There was an interesting story there that they could have done. And they opted not to do that. What about an NXT talent? Couple people mentioned Finn Balor. John Draper said Tony Khan. And then somebody else said Paige. That was the one that actually got a legit laugh out loud from me. In light of some of his joke recently about Paige. Which Paige actually, she did an interview with Lillian Garcia. And Paige said the joke itself didn't bother her. She has a great sense of humor. She can joke about herself. But, you know, she had just gotten over all of the hate on social media about, you know, the videos that came out and calling her a whore and all these awful things. It finally started to die down. And she said when Triple H cracked that joke, it just started back up all over again. And she had to see counselors and therapists, and she thought about suicide. She went through a lot of stuff when those videos came out many years ago. And she had finally thought that she put it behind her. She's like, now I was down to getting maybe like one or two comments on social media about it a day. And then Triple H made that joke and it just started all over again. Her boyfriend went off on Triple H. I mean, you listen to him and the comments that he said. If Triple H was in front of him, he would have murdered him. Although I don't know what this guy looks like. Maybe Triple H would have murdered him. But anyway, somebody said, yeah, let's do Triple H against Paige. Everybody else is getting cleared, right? Edge is getting cleared. Daniel Bryan was cleared. They'll clear Paige, and she'll have a match with Triple H at WrestleMania. There you go. SmackDown on Fox was live from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Over 2,100 votes in the Twitter poll. Might be higher by now. I'm going by the results as of last night. 28% thumbs up, 72% thumbs down. A well-deserved thumbs down. What has happened to this show? I thought this was going to be the show that became priority number one. Fox, billion-dollar deal, network television. They move their A-list announced team right over. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Roman Reigns, the big dog, you know, and then the boss time. Sasha Banks, they're going to have really go all out to make SmackDown this massive success. And I guess, you know, demo-wise, they're usually clocking in at number one or number two in the 18 to 49 demo, which I guess is important to Fox, as it is to most networks. So you can't discount the fact that Fox probably is getting their money's worth in that respect. Just in that respect, though. In every other respect, I don't see how that's possible, given the show that they're putting out every single week. Nor can I can't fathom that they'll just be able to coast along for the next few years on the product as it currently is, with main angles like the one they gave us here on this show. There was nothing super about SmackDown this week. I don't care what name they gave it. $1 billion Fox paid for this show. Remember that. When you see an entire show built around the idea of the losing team eating dog food, it should have been dog shit. It would have been more appropriate. Miz and Morrison, who have wins, or at least Morrison does, over each member of the New Day already, they still had to compete in a fatal four-way match to earn the right to challenge for the tag team titles. Well, I guess they have TV time to fill, so that's what they do. They beat the Revival, the Lucha House Party, and the Heavy Machinery. I sound like Bret Hart now. Heavy Machinery to earn the match against Kofi and Big E at Super Showdown on February 27th. The outcome of this was never in doubt, and I thought Gran Metalik in particular really shined here, but who cares? Here's my response to that. Who gives a shit? He's not going to be on TV again for 6 weeks, so what does it even matter? Skull-crushing finale followed by Starship Pain wins it. Dash and Dawson, they reportedly asked for their release again this past week from WWE. It's no wonder why. This tag team division right now is pathetic. Imagine how much worse it would be had they not put Miz and Morrison back together. Them and the New Day, they should have a pretty damn good match in Saudi Arabia. And the Dirt Sheet is coming back to SmackDown next week. Scott Dawson, speaking of the Revival, in light of this news that they had once again requested their releases, he tweeted, he said, "If we settle, you guys say we're lazy and complacent. If we try to be better, you guys say that we're whining and complaining. Make up your mind." Here's my advice, since he took it to the fans. Here's my advice. Don't worry about what the fans think. The fans don't have to make up their mind here. You have to make up your mind. You have a choice to make. And the choice is very simple. You can take the money and take the financial security that it provides you and your family, because I believe he has a daughter, if I'm not mistaken. You can just take the money and live a comfortable life and just kind of settle for mediocrity on the roster. You'll never, ever get the tag team division that you envision. It's never going to be, there's never going to be this big tag team renaissance in the company. You're never going to be used in a way that probably is creatively fulfilling to you. But you'll make pretty good money and your family will be financially secure. And hey, maybe they'll give you reduced dates, right? Supposedly that's the rumor. The company offered them this great deal, reduced dates on the schedule. Take the money and deal with it. Or if your craft is that important to you, if you care too much, if you don't want to settle, if you're not creatively fulfilled, if you're not happy, then let your contracts run out and get the fuck out of there. You have a lot of options out there right now. Maybe you're not going to make fuck you money the way you would make if you stayed in WWE. But you can work anywhere you want to. You can probably do pretty well coming off your TV run in WWE doing indie stuff. There's AEW. I'm sure there's a ready-made feud there they'd love to do with the Revival and the Young Bucks. Although when that runs its course, the question becomes, what next? Now, AEW's tag team division is pretty strong. You've got the Young Bucks. Right now, you've got Omega and Hangman as the champions. You've got the Bucks. You've got the Lucha Bros. I mean, I'm not a fan of what they've been doing with Jack Evans and Angelico. I would like to see them do more with them. Private Party, SCU. It's a whole bunch of different teams that they have. The Butcher and the Blade. Don't forget them. It's a whole bunch of different teams. So if they're concerned about having a healthy, robust tag team division, they just want to get out, they want to have creatively just have more freedom, then go to AEW. Let your contracts run out. Go talk to AEW. I'm sure you're not going to work for peanuts. You know, I'm sure that they're not going to go to AEW and sign for, pennies. You could probably still make a pretty damn good living for yourself. They don't even have house shows, so you're going to have a reduced schedule. Maybe you can work out some kind of deal where you sign with AEW and maybe you can work other dates. Dash and Dawson, they would fit right into that NWA studio. I don't know, maybe they can swing something where they make some NWA shots. There's a lot of possibilities out there for them. But don't come to the fans and complain, well, the fans, you people don't know what you want. Who gives a shit what the fans want? This is not our decision to make. We can talk about it. We can give our opinion about it. This is your decision to make. This is your call. You know, Mike and Maria, they resigned. They made their decision. They ended up regretting their decision. Anderson and Gallows, they made their decision. They opted to stay. I can't imagine that they're looking at the situation they're in and they're entirely happy. But who knows? Maybe they are. Anderson's got like 17 kids. You know, he's probably making good money. Good for him. That's a decision that you have to make. Don't put this on the fans. If you are that unhappy, then get the hell out of that company. But once you sign on the dotted line, yeah, people aren't going to want to hear you going on social media making cryptic comments about, you know, the tag team division. We're told tag team wrestling doesn't matter. You have an opportunity here to break free. This is your get out of jail free card. If your craft is that important to you and you are that dissatisfied, then leave. Nobody is forcing you to stay. Go somewhere else, throw it back in their face, and show them, hey, this is what you missed out on. Backstage, Mandy and Sonya came up to Otis and Tucker. Oh, Tucker, well, that was a tough episode of SVU on Thursday. I won't spoil it for those who still watch SVU, as I do. Yes, I still watch Law & Order, season 21. Anyway, Mandy thanked Otis for his help at the Royal Rumble, and Otis was all nervous, and Tucker told him, hey, there's no better time than now to go ahead and pop the question. And he asked her if she wanted to go out with him on a date next Friday. Yes, he picked the one day of the week that he works. Because they can only date if cameras are present. It's like the Truman Show. So Mandy says, oh, I can't, you know, I already have plans, or whatever she said. I'm busy next Friday, but I'm available the following Friday, which just so happens to be Valentine's Day. And so Otis took his shot, and it paid off. He has himself a Valentine's Day date with Mandy Rose. Well, that makes one more date more than I have on Valentine's, so good for Otis. I still think this is the best story going on this show. I know that's low praise. That's like winning the prize money in a contest for the ugliest person, but at least I said something positive about this show. Mandy and Sonya then lost to Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, who said they are now in top contention for the Women's Tag Team Championship. The announcer said that this is how awful the women's tag team division is right now. They have great champions in Asuka and Kairi, but now we're headed back to Alexa and Nikki, possibly, as challengers because they don't have anybody else. I don't know what happened to the Iconics. They just disappeared into some kind of black hole somewhere. Not that they were doing much anyway when they were on TV. But the titles are clearly not a priority for this company, and so this is what we end up with. We're going to end up with another Alexa Bliss Nikki Cross match challenging Asuka and Kairi Sane. Speaking of titles that are not a priority, Braun Strowman is the new Intercontinental Champion. He beat Shinsuke Nakamura. He got his allergy shots and finally won his first singles title in WWE. Sami Zayn exposed the top turnbuckle. It backfired. Braun rammed Nakamura headfirst into the buckle. He won with the power slam. To show you how little they care about this championship, and I don't want to hear Brock Lesnar, Brock Lesnar, Brock Lesnar. I don't want to hear Brock Lesnar's name mentioned because Brock is not on the show. Nakamura is. Every week. Brock is on the show every now and then. Nakamura is a full-time member of the roster. This was Nakamura's 200th day as the Intercontinental Champion. This was his first televised title defense since October against Roman Reigns. That is how little they care about the Intercontinental title. So congrats to Braun Strowman. He celebrated like it meant something to him. I'll give him that. On YouTube, they posted a backstage interview with him that I thought was actually pretty good. He was talking like a normal person and how important this was to him to win his first singles championship in the company. He's a likable guy. I'd like to think that things are suddenly going to change, but they won't. They never do. I'm tired of giving this company the benefit of the doubt and being made to look like a moron. So, we have a new champion. Who the hell cares? Sheamus beat Chad Gable for the second time. With the brogue kick, Gable was buried the minute they changed his name and his gear. So, he's just a lost cause at this point. But no 50-50 booking, at least. You know, they could have had Gable get some kind of fluky roll-up win. You know what? I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad that Sheamus beat him with the brogue kick. Sheamus won the first match in dominant fashion. It was competitive, but he won the first match. He won the second match. They've established that Sheamus is the one we are pushing and not Chad Gable. Now, Sheamus is not going to be wrestling The Fiend. And I hope they keep him far away from Daniel Bryan for obvious reasons. Bryan's health being one of the chief ones. So maybe that leaves Strowman for the Intercontinental title. Maybe they'll use Strowman in something of a transitional role and get the belt back on a heel soon. Sheamus would be as good of a choice as any. Otherwise, who do you program him with next? Who do you program him with going into WrestleMania? I don't know. Maybe there's a tie-in there with Strowman. Bayley. She came out to gloat about her women's championship win against Lacey Evans at the Royal Rumble. Naomi came out. Naomi is back. She looked good in the women's Rumble. Got a nice reaction from the crowd in Houston when she came back. She had been gone for many months. She came out here and she thinks the women's title needs some glow. It needs something. I'm not sure glow is at the top of the list of what it needs. Bayley went to attack her with the belt. Naomi fought her off. It's a new opponent for her until Sasha comes back at least and heals up her, I think it's an ankle injury. It's not been confirmed. Hopefully it's not serious, and hopefully we'll get Sasha back and they can do something. Make some kind of a push with Sasha and Bayley going into WrestleMania. Then came the loser eats dog food match. Reigns pins King Corbin with a cradle. They handcuff him the way that all the heels had handcuffed Roman all those many weeks ago. They hang him from the post. And they pour dog food on his head. They smear Alpo all over his face. It was more like loser gets dog food dumped on their head than loser eats dog food. All the baby faces, they're smiling. They're posing for pictures next to Corbin's handcuffed body. This looked like something out of Abu Ghraib. I would sit here and tell you, oh, thank God, we finally have, we finally got the payoff. The heels got their comeuppance, it's finally over. But I thought it was over at the Royal Rumble. Silly me. Silly me. So I am led to assume that this is just going to continue on an infinite loop. Every single week, we will get some variation of Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin, Roman Reigns and Dolph Ziggler, Roman Reigns and Bobby Roode, the Usos against Roode and Ziggler and Corbin. Some combination of this will continue on infinitely forever. Forever and ever and ever. I assume nothing anymore when it comes to these men in this feud. I don't care. This was embarrassing to watch. I would be ashamed to have watched this with somebody else in the room. I didn't even have anybody else in the room, and I was embarrassed to be watching this anyway. Breaking news, this important pubic service announcement is brought to you by Manscaped.com. After more than 18 months of research and development, I can confirm that the Manscaped engineering team has successfully created the greatest ball hair trimmer ever made. The new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 Manscaping Trimmer is now available. This third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent those unpleasant manscaping accidents. Now you can go nick-free, thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. If you already use the Lawnmower 2.0, it's an easy transition because it uses the same replacement blade. Even better, the battery will last up to 90 minutes on a single charge, so you can get as long as you need to get the job done. It's also been upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. One of the niftiest new features is the LED light, which helps illuminate grooming areas for a closer, more precise shave. And don't forget the new USB-powered charging stand. Now you can show your mower off loud and proud. Right now, be one of the first people to get your hands on the new Lawnmower 3.0. Get 20% off plus free shipping when you use the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping with the code SOLOMONSTER at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. NXT this past week, Finn Balor was not happy about Mustache Mountain sticking their nose in his business at Worlds Collide when he attacked Johnny Gargano and they made the save, so he took that anger out on Trent Seven in the parking lot outside the Performance Center the night before NXT as he was getting into his car, which led to this match here. A lot of aggression shown here by Balor, more than usual. He gets the win with the coup de grace in the 1916. I can only hope that this leads to a Finn Balor-Tyler Bate match on TV this week. I think that would be pretty damn fun. Hell, Jordan Devlin. Look, Jordan Devlin has the Cruiserweight Championship now. So he'll be making appearances more often at Full Sail. In fact, I think he's making his 205 Live debut this upcoming week. He's already been announced for NXT this week. Balor helped train him. Give us Balor and Devlin against Mustache Mountain at some point. Now, Trent Seven actually helped train Tyler Bate, so you'd have that dynamic too on both teams, trainer and pupil. I think that could be a pretty kick-ass match. We got a weird video with some circles popping up on screen. Inside three of the circles were the numbers 20, 5, and 2, likely referring to this week's NXT, which falls on February 5th, 2020. Maybe Velveteen Dream is finally coming back. You know, he was backstage at the Royal Rumble. They didn't use him. I'm still holding out hope on my prediction of a John Cena-Velveteen Dream match at WrestleMania this year, with Cena putting over the Velveteen Dream. I still think there's a chance it could happen. I know Cena's been talking. He wants to be at WrestleMania. You know, even if I just do something small like I did last year, I want to be part of the show. He lives in Tampa, so he's going to be at WrestleMania. You know, I can't imagine he'll be at WrestleMania and be in the back and not be used. Question is, how are they going to use him? Is he going to be able to do a match? I don't know. But if he does, I'd like to see it against the Velveteen Dream. Shotzi Blackheart now rides a kiddie tank to the ring with a helmet and everything. She stole Sammy Guevara's gimmick from last weekend. Sammy was in Houston outside Minute Maid Park for the Rumble. He was riding around in a mini tank. He was being filmed for his vlog. Anyway, she beat Deonna Purrazzo. We have not seen Deonna Purrazzo on TV since her one appearance on Monday Night Raw against Asuka. That was back in December. Shotzi is already very popular at Full Sail. She's only been on television for a few weeks. She had that big moment in the Battle Royal a few weeks ago where she dumped out Shayna Baszler. So she's already a big fan favorite at Full Sail. She was a, you know, she failed at Tough Enough. She had tried to get on Tough Enough many years ago, didn't work out. So yeah, it's a nice journey for her to get to where she is now. But, you know, I think in time, she could end up being one of the top three players in that women's division. And that division is stocked with a lot of people right now. I think she could get to a point where she's in that top three of women in that division. The new North American champion, Keith Lee, was out for a promo. And, you know, with a voice like that, he ought to be narrating audiobooks on his spare time or doing voiceover work. It's like low key. He's got a great voice. Just don't do a podcast. You know, that's my turf. Don't be infringing on my turf now. We got enough podcasts out there. Damian Priest walked out. He demanded a North American title shot. That brought out Dominic Dijakovic, who got in the ring and said that he deserves the first shot at the championship and not this bootleg Marilyn Manson. Priest and Dijakovic, they came to blows. That led to a match. Damian Priest, who is 6 feet 7 inches tall. Some websites say 6'7", some say 6'5". The point is, he's a big dude. He's a big, tall dude. And so is Dijakovic. But Priest has him up on the top rope and he executes an Avalanche Poison Rana. Now, an Avalanche Poison Rana is one of those moves that I think should end things no matter who you are. But when you're that big and you're hitting a Poison Rana, an Avalanche Poison Rana off the top rope, he spiked Dijakovic on top of his head and only got a near fall. That should have been the finish. But such is the state of wrestling today. Priest picked him up, went for the reckoning. Dijakovic slipped out, hit his Feast Your Eyes finish for the win. If that means that we're going to get Lee and Dijakovic again, this time with a championship on the line, I'm okay with that. They've had so many matches already. But this would be their first in NXT for a championship if they do it. So one more match between them on a takeover show with a title on the line? I think that would be an excellent idea. Poppy, by the way, have to mention this, Poppy is coming back to perform at Portland at the Takeover show on February 16th. Someone ought to let Mish know from Wrestling Soup. He'll be very excited. I saw that Mish was at a Poppy show just the other night. He was tweeting about it. He was waiting in line. I said this to him. Honest to God, at first glance, I thought the hashtag that he used said poopy, and that I thought he was waiting in line for the men's room to take a shit. Then I realized it said Poppy. That's a very big difference there. So after laying out Roderick Strong, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly off camera in the back, Tommaso Ciampa made his way out to the ring. He put a table in the ring. He spray painted a yellow X in the middle of it. He marked the spot where he wanted to put Adam Cole through it. And when Cole found his boys all laid out backstage, he stormed out into the arena. He was going to confront Ciampa. Ciampa said, Goldie is coming home with me in Portland to take over. He promised to powerbomb Cole through the X on the table. A wild William Regal made a rare appearance. He said that while Ciampa was talking to him, the rest of Undisputed Era was laid out. Meanwhile, he was in Regal's office talking about or signing a contract for TakeOver. Cole, to his credit, even though he's the heel, he didn't back down. He came down to the ring. He nailed Ciampa on top of the head with a microphone shot. That busted Ciampa's head open hard way. Ciampa, though, he caught Cole with a powerbomb as promised through the table. He reached for a pen and he was going to sign the contract. And the fans started chanting, use your blood. So he smeared the blood from his head on the contract and held the contract up, blood all over it, kind of like Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. They had blood on their contract when that was signed for their match at WrestleMania 19. I know this because when they signed a deal with NBC Universal many years ago, they had a temporary, it was almost like a smaller version of what one day will be the WWE Hall of Fame if they ever get a physical Hall of Fame. So in Rockefeller Center, up on one of the top floors, they had a WWE exhibit. And I, on my lunch break, because I don't work very far from there, I would walk over there. I did it a few times. And I took pictures of the different exhibits. And one of the exhibits was the bloodstained contract from the contract signing on SmackDown of the match between Hogan and Vince at WrestleMania 19. So similar visual here. I think as contract signings go, this was pretty great. Tegan Knox against Dakota Kai in a grudge match. This only went 3 minutes. Tegan Knox won. Candice LeRae stopped Dakota at one point from using a chair on Knox. Tegan hit her with a knee brace, which the referee did not see, and that followed was followed up by the shiniest wizard for the shiniest win for Tegan Knox. You know, it was a quick brawl. Knox got revenge. It was kind of weird. It almost felt like a blow-off, but they have since announced that the two of them will have a rematch at TakeOver in Portland in a street fight. So perhaps Dakota Kai can get her revenge there. Caden Carter pinned Chelsea Green, another weird finish. Green has Robert Stone now in her corner. And Robert Stone did nothing. He played no role. You know, Chelsea Green was also in the Women's Royal Rumble match. She was overconfident. She got dumped out very quickly. Here she was overconfident again. She was gloating, she was showboating, and she was beaten in 3 minutes by a woman who we were told had never won a match before on NXT television. She won with a roll-up while Green was celebrating a big boot that she had hit. She was too busy celebrating and she got rolled up. Maybe that's the gimmick. Maybe she's just full of herself and she's going to get beat a lot. Because of it, I don't see that as a winning formula as far as taking somebody seriously. But maybe that's the whole point. Or maybe she'll get her win back this week. Maybe we'll see a rematch on Wednesday and she'll get her win back. And then we had the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic with the grizzled young veterans taking on the Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne. Mauro Ranallo had a line in talking about the Dusty Classic where he said, and I quote, Dusty Rhodes' DNA is all over NXT. Which would explain why they call them Dusty's kids. That's absolutely disgusting. I was repulsed by this line by Mauro Ranallo. Meanwhile, Dusty's actual DNA could be seen on TNT if you just change the channel. This was a very good match. I did think that at one point Gibson had that Shankly Gates submission of his on Pete Dunne. I thought that looked awful. didn't look like he was applying any pressure at all on his arm. It's like when people do the sharpshooter, but they stand up. It's like, why do you even bother? It looks horrible. Nobody looks at that and says, oh my God, that this guy is in so much pain. It looks horrendous. This was a terrible Shankly Gates. The craziest spot, though, was Gibson getting Pete Dunne on his shoulders outside the ring for James Drake to come flying through the ropes for a doomsday device to Pete Dunne on the floor. It looked great. That should have taken Dunne out for good. And yet 90 seconds later, he was up and celebrating like it was nothing. You know, it is what it is. I could go off on this all the time. I love NXT. I love AEW. I love a lot of aspects of the shows. Other aspects, I don't. This is the one that bothers me the most. And they're both guilty of it. WWE is guilty of it. NXT is guilty of it. AEW is guilty of it. You know, Lucha Underground, even. I mean, you could say that all the promotions are guilty of it. You know, the big moves and the destroyers and the poison ranas off the top rope and everybody just kicks out. You know, these are Petey Williams on Twitter last week apologizing for the destroyer becoming a transition move. I never intended for it to become a transition move, he said. It's a shame. It's a shame. Drake hit a 450 on Riddle inside for a near fall. Broserweights are now both on the top rope. And Dunne hits a moonsault out onto Gibson on the floor. At the same time, Riddle comes off the ropes, the same turnbuckle, the same post, in the ring, and he hits the floating bro on James Drake. Pete Dunne comes back in. Super GTS gets the win for the Broserweights. They are your 2020 Dusty Cup winners. Riddle and Dunne, they were my early pick to win the entire thing. So score one for the good guys. They released footage on YouTube from after they went off the air of Riddle and Dunne celebrating in the crowd. And the interaction between the two of them is just great. They're just polar opposites. You know, Riddle is the most outgoing person probably on that entire roster. It's just his personality. Pete Dunne is the opposite. He's very quiet. He never smiles. He refuses to crack a smile. They make a great odd couple tag team. But I do have to take Mauro Ranallo to task for his closing line. And since he's no longer on social media, nor am I a colleague of his like Corey Graves was, I can safely say this. And I like Mauro, but he said that he called the Broserweights, right? At the very end of the show, he said the Broserweights are a team of Dusty Knee. Oh my God. Was that a horrendously bad line? Holy shit. Wow. That was terrible. On the subject of Mauro Ranallo and the whole Corey Graves controversy, he was on a radio show in Vancouver and broke his silence about the Corey Graves Twitter stuff from a few months ago, after which, if you remember, he missed a few shows and he deactivated his Twitter account, which has remained deactivated ever since. This is what he said. He said, it was a blessing in disguise. I have nothing really to say about Corey Graves or anyone else in my professional existence, in the sense that everyone is entitled to their opinion. Everyone is able to critique everyone that they want to. I would never do something like that to a coworker. But that has been addressed, and if anything, I publicly thank Corey Graves, because he was the straw that broke the camel's back, or the proverbial back, he said, in terms of my social media activity. And I will say here and now, I have deactivated all of my social media since November, and I would implore everyone to do the same, especially those with mental health issues. Social media is so dangerous to those of us with mental health conditions, and I know in the media and our everyday lives now, people are being hired and fired by their social media followings or the amount of information they post or how popular they are. I think it is a disease. So out of that situation with my colleague, I am no longer on social media. I will never get back on social media. He called social media a disease. Well, if you've ever seen some of the discourse on Twitter, or if you've checked the YouTube comments section, I detect no lies in what Mauro Ranallo is saying. But there you have it. He certainly did not refute the story. He all but confirmed the story with Corey Graves, and that it was what Corey said that led him to have a breakdown of sorts and led him to deactivate his social media. But you know what? In the end, at least it led to something positive for him. No more social media. for Mauro Ranallo. But this takeover card is shaping up to be a doozy. So far, we've got Adam Cole against Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT Championship. We've got Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair for the women's title. Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne challenging Undisputed Era for the tag team titles. Tegan Knox and Dakota Kai in a street fight. Finn Balor against Johnny Gargano. And possibly, it's not official yet, but possibly Keith Lee defending the North American title against Donovan Dijak. That is one hell of a lineup right there. And even some of the weaker takeover cards on paper end up being excellent shows. When you have a show like this on paper that looks as strong as it is, I mean, this could end up being one of the better takeovers they've ever done. And it's the first time that Takeover is standing on its own. It is not attached to a Royal Rumble or a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam. It's usually on a Saturday night. This time, they are standing all on their own. It is on a Sunday night, and we'll see how it does. But on paper, this looks like an excellent show. NWA Power. I never did get a chance to watch the Hard Times pay-per-view because I had just gotten back from the Jericho Cruise, and I just had way too much other stuff to do. Plus, Worlds Collide, Royal Rumble. It was a terrible weekend in terms of just being busy, so time got away from me. Thankfully, they replayed all of the important match finishes on this week's show. So I don't feel like I really missed much, and now I'm all caught up again. So Sean Mooney has been hired as an interviewer, which I love. Loved Sean Mooney back in the day on the event centers and doing all the backstage interviews. So he is now an interviewer in the NWA, and he made his NWA Power debut this week interviewing the world's heavyweight champion, Nick Aldis. This was the Nick Aldis show this week. His promo here and his work at the end of the show and that sit-down with Marty Skrill was tremendous stuff. I cannot say enough good things about the work he's doing right now, verbally, to make that NWA title feel like the most important title in all of wrestling. He mentioned his win over Flip Gordon at Hard Times. He said Flip is a flop. He called him Flop Gordon. He said Marty Skrill wants nothing to do with him. Sean Mooney pointed out that you had Skrull removed from the building at the pay-per-view, and Aldis said fake news, and he said the NWA may as well call him the Marathon Man because he runs the show. I thought this was great stuff. Thunder Rosa beat Allison Kay at Hard Times to win the NWA Women's Championship. She came out here with Melina and Marty Bell for a promo. Melina would not let her get a word in at first. She interrupted her before she could answer the question that was posed to her. But then Rosa finally got a chance to speak. And her rematch with Allison Kay happens this Tuesday. She was thankful to Melina for opening doors for her, but she was the one fighting. She said there is not one other woman anywhere in wrestling who can beat her. And the look on Melina's face at that point signaled that she might disagree with that statement. So she was talking about how much the championship, winning the championship, meant to her. When Melina cut her off and said, enough of all the emo crap, we're out of here, and clearly, they're setting up for a Rosa babyface turn soon and a feud with Melina. The fans already love her. I mean, how could they not after that MMA package that they aired for her a few months ago? I mean, that was a total babyface video package. So they almost had to turn her babyface. You just kind of go with the flow. The people love her. Why fight it? Why fight the tide against that? Ricky Starks is the new television champion. He beat Trevor Murdoch in the finals of the TV title tournament at Hard Times. He cut a fun promo here. I saw some people in the group actually saying that, the Facebook group, he doesn't fit into the NWA, he's too small, he should be in AEW instead. Not everybody needs to look like Trevor Murdoch to fit into the NWA. I like Ricky. I like his promos. I think it's good to have variety. And it's a great platform for him to use to up his profile a little bit so that when he does end up going somewhere else, which I assume at some point he will, people will, at least some people, will already know who he is. You know, he called out Zicky Dice. Starks challenged him to a match. Dice accepted. Ricky beat him to retain the championship. Joe Galli told us about this new Lucky 7 rule, where if the TV champion can successfully defend the title 7 consecutive times, they earn a shot at the 10 pounds of gold. And just like that, it makes each of these TV title defenses, each of these 6-minute and 5-second TV title defenses, mean that much more. Because now, can Ricky Starks rack up 7 wins in a row and earn a shot at the championship? You know, there's drama now. Oh, he's got 5 wins. He only needs 2 more. Instead of it just being another TV title match now, it has more meaning to it. I like that rule. Eli Drake and James Storm, they are the new NWA World Tag Team Champions. So the feel-good run of the Rock and Roll Express has come to a close at hard times. Shooter Stevens walked out with the question mark to challenge them. James Storm was drunk during this and kept interrupting and acting obnoxious. Even Hangman Page was watching this like, hey, dude, you might have a problem. So Trevor Murdoch came out to confront Stevens. He said, you know, I've got myself a national title match next week. And the question mark caught him with a Mongrovian spike to the throat, left him laying. Show closed with a pre-taped sit-down interview with Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll. Aldis kept Scurll waiting for 20 minutes. He was about to leave. Finally, the champion showed up, fashionably late. Sorry I'm late, he said. Aldis talked about how the two of them, they've been friends since they were teenagers. You know, I've always been here for you, and I always answered the phone for you, Marty, no matter what time. I would offer any advice that you needed, any help, any encouragement. So then Marty challenged him last year at the Crockett Cup for the World Championship, and I didn't take it personally because I thought that you deserved it. Aldis won that match, and when the match was over, they shook hands. Multiple times, Aldis made mention of Skrull's big money deal, alluding to the big contract he just signed with Ring of Honor, the biggest deal supposedly in Ring of Honor's history. Skrull said, it's not about my deal. It's not about the money. For the longest time now, I've had fans telling me, you should have been the world champion. You should have won the world title last year at Madison Square Garden, that being the ROH New Japan Supercard at MSG, with that very dubious finish where Matt Taven won the championship and not Marty Scurll. Matt Taven, mind you, who later on we came to find out had an expiring deal many months later. Around the same time, actually, his deal was coming due earlier than Marty's deal was. They had Marty Scurll under contract for a few months longer than they had Matt Taven. So this whole notion of, well, they couldn't put the title on Marty because Marty was almost assuredly going to go to AEW. And as it turned out, that was a bullshit excuse. And I still don't understand why they didn't put the title on him. So he incorporated that into this promo. Oh, I have fans telling me I should have been the champion, and I have fans telling me I should have beaten you for the 10 pounds of gold at the Crockett Cup last year. He says, it's not about the money. It's about the fact that I have never been a world champion before. Meanwhile, Aldis, you've been a world champion all over the world. You were a world champion in TNA. Now you're a world champion in the NWA. He says, I know I can beat Nick Aldis. I know I can beat you. He wants the match so badly, he says, he's willing to do it for free. Aldis can even take his purse money for the match. He just wants one more chance. So Aldis thought about it, and he agreed. But he said, under my terms, I'll give you a rematch 1 year after our first match, which would be the next Crockett Cup show coming up in April. But if Marty does not win, if he does not win the championship, then Skrull has to write a check to refund all of the fans in attendance for the money they paid for their ticket. A money-back guarantee match. So Marty was caught off guard by this. Aldis said, you know, think about it. He walked off. Brilliant. If I was the champion and I really didn't want to wrestle the other guy, the surest way to get him to turn down the match, which of course he won't, but the surest way to try to get him to say no would be to force him to have to pay back the gate for the show. I think that's brilliant. Anyway, they mentioned that there's different cities that are bidding, you know, for the right to host the Crockett Cup in April this year, even though Billy Corgan has already announced that it's going to be held in Atlanta. So, spoiler, the Crockett Cup will be happening in Atlanta this year. I thought this was a fantastic segment. The back and forth between them, it was believable. It sounded like a real exchange between two friends, between two people, two human beings, right? They're not just reading off of something or memorizing lines or anything. Marty has established that he is desperate to be a world champion. It's the one thing that he has never done. If I were in the crowd that night, though, I'm rooting to get my money back. If I'm in Atlanta that night for the Crockett Cup, I'm sorry, Marty, but yeah, I want my money back. I want a great match, and at the end of that match, I don't care if he wins. I get my money back. So it'd be very funny if Marty ends up getting booed and Aldis gets cheered for that stipulation. I suppose that's the one risk that you run when you announce a stipulation like that. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind, taking us back over 20 years to the time where there were not one but two riots that broke out at WWE events on back-to-back nights. First in Memphis, Tennessee, and again the next night in Little Rock, Arkansas. I covered this on Sound Off, I forgot the episode number, but it was 2 years ago. The Cliff Notes version of what happened is as follows, for those who don't know. Memphis came first on December 14th, 1997. The main event was scheduled to be Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And DX came out, the crowd was throwing garbage at the ring. Supposedly Triple H got hit in the eye with something, and his eye began to swell up. And so Shawn Michaels said, "Let's go." And they walked out. And Jerry Lawler, who was the hometown hero, he got on the mic and he tried to get the fans to chant Shawn's name to get him to come back out, but he never did. And a riot broke out with people throwing glass bottles and just all kinds of shit into the ring. And the show was called off at that point. Now, I say riot. I mean, it wasn't like the LA riots or anything like that. Triple H was hardly Rodney King. So I don't want to make it sound like the arena was being burned down or anything like that. But it was a scary situation. The next night in Little Rock, it was a Monday night. Local advertising for the show led people to believe that this was going to be a Monday Night Raw taping. And so when fans showed up at the building that night, they were greeted by not what they expected. They were greeted by a live event and not a Monday Night Raw taping. Raw had already been taped. You know, the week before, this was just a house show. That pissed off a lot of people who paid for their ticket thinking that they were going to Monday Night Raw. Now, to make matters worse, the card they got that night sucked. You had matches like Kane against Chains of DOA and the Godwins against the Headbangers and Mark Merrow against Flash Funk, which actually that might have been a good match, but this is not what people paid to see. This is not what people wanted to see. Undertaker, who was being spit on the night before by fans in Memphis, was working hurt. So he had a very short casket match against Rocky Maivia, and they had a ceremony honoring the legendary Danny Hodge with Shawn Michaels, the top heel in the promotion, in the ring, to present Hodge with an award. Seems like a very odd choice for the person to do the honors here. Not that it excuses the behavior of the fans, but it just was an odd choice to have your top heel out there during a ceremony like this. And the fans booed him throughout the entire ceremony, which only served to make Shawn mad. So when he and Triple H came out for the main event, Shawn got hit with something. He got hit, you know, he got on the mic. He said, "You just lost your main event." And they walked to the back again. Second night in a row, they walked to the back. He pulled the same thing a few months later in Boston. There was an outdoor event to promote the WrestleMania match with Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. Mike Tyson was there. And he got hit with something. I think the claim might have been a battery or something, but he got hit, and Shawn walked out. Although I think they did finally talk him into coming back out. Here, he did not come back out, and that's when things went to hell. People started throwing chairs, some people started fires in the building, the state police were called in, they had to use tear gas to subdue the crowd. When people went to go ask for refunds, they were denied. A second riot broke out in the parking lot, so it was bad. It was bad. And I'm not even laying all of the blame on Shawn Michaels being a dick because, look, you can't throw bottles and batteries at the wrestlers. It's not their fault. Or were they? Or were they being pelted with those objects? There's some debate about that, as you'll see in a second. Some fans dispute exactly what they were hit with. But both nights, both incidents just so happened to involve Shawn Michaels, which, given how he was back then, is not really all that surprising. You know, if there was one member of that roster that would have started a riot at the time, it probably would have been Shawn Michaels. So I thought, you know, this could make for an interesting RSPW segment. What did people have to say about this at the time? And I was able to find a few posts, not a lot, but there were a few posts about it. Starting with this one from Shane Dixon on December 16th, 1997, titled WWF Riot on December 15th. Tonight I went to a WWE house show in my hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas. The cards sucked, the lineup was not anything near what was advertised, and the matches went about 3 minutes each. At the end of the night, Hunter Hearst Helmsley was supposed to fight Dude Love. However, Shawn Michaels was hit by a piece of paper and told the crowd we had lost the main event. Everyone waited a couple of minutes to see if DX would return, but the announcer said the card was over. At the time, chaos began. Chairs were hurled toward the ring, and police were pelted with whiskey bottles. The cops had to use tear gas to stop the riot. I had never heard so much complaining from fans in my life. Well, it's a good thing he didn't live through the internet age. Or maybe he did. I'm not implying that Mr. Dixon is dead, but little did he know how much the fans would complain as the years went on. Anyway, he said, I must agree that the card sucked. I'm not excusing the actions of the fans, but HBK was not hit with a bottle or even a cup of Coke. It was just a piece of paper. It's the fans' money that pays his outrageous salary, so he should get off his throne and earn his pay. Maybe he should ask his buddies down south how to act professional and still do their jobs. I heard the same thing happen last night in Memphis. The WWF needs to hold on to what few fans they have left, and shows like this are not helping. Ripclaw responds, well, let's see. He was hit last night in Memphis by some dumb hicks who can't behave, and was wary of idiots tonight throwing stuff again. Who is to say that it couldn't have gotten uglier with someone throwing something else? I don't blame Shawn one bit for walking out, or any wrestler who does that. I'm hoping more will start to do that. To put up with the abuse of fans who throw stuff and then have idiots come on here with crap like, well, we pay his salary, is pathetic. Actually, it kind of reminds me of the fans who would tell CM Punk, we bought your house. I always love those people. We bought your house, CM Punk. No, you didn't. Sit down and shut up. He says, you fans are to blame. Like tonight on Nitro with those punks going into the ring. I'm waiting for a wrestler to actually give a DDT for real on one of these fools. Maybe then the jumping in the ring will stop. And Forever Macho says, I thought the riot was quite comical and timely as we just saw Vince McMahon on Raw giving some sort of speech about the WWF changing and giving the fans what they want and such. I really didn't pay attention because Raw was taped, which brings up an interesting point. What happens when this starts up on a Raw episode? I mean, hell, it's on its way, so set your VCRs. The WWF is turning their fans into animals. Before any people point fingers, just look at the product being promoted now. It is trash. And, well, trash breeds trash, and sometimes trash hits people in the head. And Shawn is an ass, and always has been, so you get what happened last night. ECW fans behave better than that, although I think if Sabu said that he wasn't going to wrestle because some fan hit him, we would have a chair riot. You'd probably have a lot more than that if you pulled that in the old ECW. On December 17th, Wilfredo Sanchez posted, WWF's new attitude is taking its toll. Yes, it might be possible that there were some fans at both shows that might have been drunk and were ready to cause problems from the get-go, but at the same time, the incidents were similar in the fact that they both occurred in the main event with Shawn Michaels and Triple H, who are the main focus of the whole new attitude thing. I honestly think there are some fans that are less tolerant than others and get offended faster by the performer's antics. Last week, we saw D-Generation X members playing strip poker, drinking Jack Daniels and smoking cigars while Shawn Michaels was stripping off his clothes and ended only with his briefs on. That might be very cool to some WWF fans, but there are other wrestling fans who don't think the same and are willing to pay the price of a ticket to let the WWF know what and how they feel about this whole new attitude thing. I personally do not approve of such demonstrations. The price a fan pays for a ticket does not give him the right to harm the wrestlers by throwing objects at the ring, and I think the fans that do this are just stupid. On the other hand, I don't blame them. Shawn Michaels ended the show on both nights by saying, "There goes your main event," and turned back to the locker room, sticking almost literally to his new status as the showstopper. Oh, my God. This made the crowds on both nights angrier. The wrestlers have a responsibility to perform to the best of their abilities and give back to the fans what they paid for. Wrestlers chose the wrestling business as their way of living, And they know what they should expect from anyone, or they know they should expect anything, rather, from anyone, including insult and aggression if they play the heel role. The WWF should be responsible to the fans who want to enjoy a good wrestling card by executing their institutional right to check on all the fans who pay their admission to the card and return the money to those who feel they might cause problems during the card. I don't know what he means. Their institutional rights. Is there like a wrestling constitution or something I'm not aware of here? Birder Dude replied, I was at the show in Little Rock, and I agree that jerks that were throwing stuff had no right to do so and spoiled the fun for everyone. I also don't blame DX or any other wrestler for that matter for wanting to feel safe in their workplace. Here's the problem as I see it for the WWF. There were about 6,000 people at the show. Maybe 50 people were throwing stuff before Sean walked out, after which maybe 1,000 more got involved. So about 4,950 people who did nothing wrong left the show feeling cheated. When I left, the crowd was chanting WCW. That's not good news for the WWF. One other thing. Triple H spit on a kid in the crowd. So I wonder, does a wrestler open himself up for this type of crowd behavior if he spits on someone? Come to think of it, just a couple of months ago, didn't DX spray the crowd at a Raw show with Coke or beer or something? How does that play into the situation? Jeff says, I read one account of the riot in Little Rock, and it had me rolling on the floor laughing. The person said that chants of WCW broke out very loud and lots of people rushed the ring. As they were hauling one person away, the person flashed the hand signal the NWO uses, and the place went nuts. It was like the whole audience was a WCW plant. I could not help but laugh. Big Daddy says, after the Sunday afternoon disaster in Memphis, Jerry Lawler went on a local radio show and blamed the whole incident on WCW fans. He went so far as to imply that they were planted by WCW to disrupt the show. What an idiot. And finally, December 17th, a post by Christopher Bird titled NWO to Blame for Rowdy WWF Fans, Thoughts on Stupid People Rioting. On the person that had said that the WWF is to blame for turning the fans into animals, this is what Christopher had to say. I'm sorry, but what a load of horseshit. Firstly, let's all remember how the garbage tossing began. You might have heard this little organization called the NWO. You also may have heard of WCW planting people at ringside to toss crap into the ring when the NWO showed up. They stopped doing that eventually, but it caught on in a lot of the hometown WCW arenas, which coincidentally enough are in the same area that the WWF was just touring. If you feel like linking run-ins as being akin to garbage tossing in spirit, well, WCW leads in that as well. But really, the argument here is that the WWF, by catering to low morals, is turning its fans into bloodthirsty savages, incapable of not throwing trash. Let's review the usual assortment of things people typically complain about vis-a-vis the WWF. Racist angles like the Nation of Domination and the Bariquas, or NOD. Kane and The Undertaker, Austin saying the word ass, Goldust and Luna, DX. These are the things people claim as being offensive. So one by one, let's look at these. Racist angles. The Nation of Domination graffiti angle is long gone. In fact, the entire NOD Islam gimmick is currently being ignored. The NOD are currently more like a black version of the Four Horsemen. Their angles consist of Austin feuding with Rocky and Farouk eventually getting the boot. As for the Bariquas, hey, Conan doesn't cause riots. Undertaker and Kane. It's childish, but so is Doink. Lest we forget the infamous clown riot of 1994, I think this one is dismissible. I must have missed that clown riot. Austin's mic work. He says ass and damn. So do the people on Friends, and they're on an hour earlier and have 15 times the viewership. Come on, you can hear ass and damn out of the mouths of priests these days, and not just in Bible quotations. As for the drinking beers, 75% of America drinks beer. Deal with it. Goldust and Luna. The fans think it sucks, I agree. I don't think the amazing powers of Luna Vachon have turned the crowds, though, into bloodthirsty mobs. And finally, DX. I don't know. Is it their vague homoeroticism? Goldust was a lot less vague and he didn't start riots. Is it that they're heels? I mean, come on. They're better. There are better reasons. I cannot see this. Somebody help me. Dave Blazina says this. If you appeal to a family-oriented crowd, you get mom and dad bringing the kiddies. If you try to appeal to a more hardcore crowd, you're going to get a lot more of the testosterone-charged audience. No one expects a mini-riot to break out at the Ice Follies, but when there are 30 arrests at a Slayer concert, few people are surprised. It's been made clear that Vince is appealing to a different crowd with WWF's new direction, so you have to be prepared for a different audience to show up at their shows. The screw authority angle is all the rage right now in the WWF. If they show and glorify Triple H and Shawn Michaels beating the crap out of the commissioner, why wouldn't you expect some idiots in the audience to take that disrespect for authority too far and bombard the ring with garbage, showing no respect for the wrestlers, the security, or the other fans in attendance? Maybe this is an isolated incident, or maybe it's a sign of things to come. There are always going to be some jackasses in the crowd, but there may be a higher percentage of them with the WWF's new direction. Incidentally, I do not blame Shawn Michaels or any other wrestler for not going on. They're paid to put on a show, not dodge objects from the audience. Maybe Shawn and Triple H should go to 7-Eleven the next day and throw stuff at them when they're trying to work the Slurpee machine and see how they like it. Matty C says, I went to a WWF show at the Cow Palace about 9 years ago, and I've never seen anyone get pelted like poor Sherry Martel got pelted that night. Security did nothing but run after the garbage and beverage throwers the whole match, and they were none too gentle with them when they caught up to them. She looked like she had been dipped in Coke and rolled in porn, or popcorn, oops. Slip of the tongue there. She looked like she had been dipped in Coke and rolled in popcorn by the time the match was over. That kind of behavior is so out of line, a $15 ticket does not buy you permission to act like an asshole. And Henry writes, I agree. No matter how much you hate the wrestler, it does not give you the right to throw things at them. You have to remember they are here for your entertainment, not to be abused. I wish that they would write up something so that if you throw something at a wrestler, the wrestler has the right to drag you into the ring and powerbomb you. It's like if I threw a Coke at a baseball player because I hate him. Do I have that right? If I threw a Coke at anybody right now, does he have to take it? No, he's probably going to try to kick my ass. Wrestlers should have the same rights. I have often argued this on this very podcast, that any fan who jumps over the barricade and comes at a wrestler or comes at a referee or any of the performers, it is fair game for them to take at least one shot at them to subdue them. Punch them, tackle them to the ground, spear, whatever. Whatever it takes. You don't know if they have a gun, a knife, or a box cutter. You don't know what their intentions are. So, in that instance, you do know what needs to be done to protect yourself and your colleagues and the other audience members. You know, there's video of Triple H many years ago in the late 90s, suplexing some drunk dipshit to the ground during a match against Stone Cold, and Mike Chioda was the referee, and Triple H is pounding on the guy once he gets him down, and Chioda's getting in some kicks on him for good measure. Send a message. That's what I say. Send a message. Now, of course, I don't run the company, or else I might have a very different opinion of how to handle a situation like that to avoid any litigation. I might feel differently if I were Jerry McDevitt on WWE Legal, or if I were Vince McMahon. But I say send a message. You hop over that barricade, you come at me, you're fair game. So this has been your weekly reminder that I would like to see Onision hop the barricade at a New Japan show during a Minoru Suzuki match, just to see what would happen. That would take care of that problem real quick. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I don't have a lot of time this week, but I plucked a couple here to tackle. David from Staines, UK. Been a listener for over 10 years now. He says he's definitely going for another 10. Hell yeah! Buy or sell on the bigger Royal Rumble moment. AJ Styles debuting in 2016 or Edge returning in this year's Royal Rumble? Well, I was there for AJ's debut in Orlando, and the reaction was very special. That was a special moment when he walked out, most of which you missed because Kevin Dunn thought it was more important to shoot Roman Reigns' face. Like, Roman's face was separating from his body, and it was going to get its own entry into the Royal Rumble or something. But I got a buy on Edge. There were rumors for weeks, but he vehemently denied it. Nobody knew for sure that he was going to be in there. It's been 9 years, you know, I didn't think he was coming back. And then when that first chord hit, "You Think You Know Me," and 40,000 people came unglued, and there he is, looking like the Edge of old, you know, with the long hair and the trench coat. That's the best Rumble moment in years. That is an all-time moment for me. I thought that was great. So I've got a buy on Edge. Howie from New Jersey. He doesn't say where in New Jersey, but I'm very glad Howie wrote in. I've been waiting for somebody to ask me about this for a few weeks now, or else I wasn't going to use it. He asked me about my top matches of the decade, because I covered who my top five wrestlers were of the decade, but I didn't do any feature on what I thought were the best or the top 10, you know, matches of the decade. And I put my list together last month. I put my list together many weeks ago. And I had planned to do an entire episode dedicated to the decade stuff, and I put notes together on it and everything, and I just never had the chance. So I did the ranking of the wrestlers separately. So he wanted to know, what are my top 10 matches of the decade covering 2010 to 2019? And lucky for you, I already had my list composed, and this is as good of a place as any to run through them. And even better, I have a top 15 matches, not top 10. So I'm giving you an extra five. So you know, these are not ranked outside of my number one pick for the greatest match of the decade, and that match is the 2 out of 3 falls match from New Japan's Dominion show in 2018 for the IWGP heavyweight title, the fourth battle between Okada and Kenny Omega, the night that Omega finally won the big one. They went over an hour, 69 minutes. Yeah. I'm a child, what can I say? 69 minutes, to be exact. Now, at the time that I reviewed it on the podcast, I said it was like three matches rolled up into one. You know, for a match that long, I was never once bored watching that match. One of the greatest matches that I have ever seen. That whole series of matches between the two of them was tremendous. So, this one was really the capper to what was a classic feud. 720 days ended for Okada as the IWGP champion. He set all kinds of records during that run, which I guess is why they wanted him to go over on Naito at Wrestle Kingdom, when a lot of people thought that was a mistake and it was Naito's time. Okada couldn't break some of these records unless he beat Naito and held on to the championship until the summer. And that's what he did. But this was my match of the decade, was the night that Omega beat Okada for the championship, 2 out of 3 falls. I think this was the match of the decade. And here are 14 more very quickly. I'll run through them real quick. That were among my favorite and what I think were the very best. Number two, and again, these are not ranked. I'm giving numbers, but they're not ranked. I'm actually, if anything, I'm ranking them by date order here. But number two, John Cena and CM Punk. Money in the Bank 2011. I said at the time, it was magic. It was magic. I would have loved to have been in the building in Chicago that night for that match. Number three, John Cena against Brock Lesnar at Extreme Rules 2012. That was Brock's first match back. I think the outcome was wrong, but the match itself I thought was great. Number four, The Shield against Ryback and Team Hell No at TLC 2012. This was the in-ring debut of Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns. That was in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center that night. Fantastic match. Number five, Brock Lesnar against CM Punk, SummerSlam 2013. I believe I had that as my match of the year that year. Number six, The Shield against the Wyatt family, Elimination Chamber 2014. Number seven, Mil Muertes against Rey Fénix, Grave Consequences, from the March 18, 2015 episode of Lucha Underground. The best casket match in any promotion that I have ever seen was Mil Muertes and Fénix from, I think that would have been season 1 of Lucha Underground. Number 8, Sasha Banks against Bayley, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn in 2015. Number 9, John Cena against AJ Styles, SummerSlam 2016. Number 10, DIY against The Revival, 2 out of 3 falls, TakeOver Toronto back in 2016. Number 11, Pete Dunne against Tyler Bate for the United Kingdom title, TakeOver Chicago 2017. Number 12, Andrade Cien Almas against Johnny Gargano, TakeOver Philadelphia 2018. Number 13, Adam Cole against Johnny Gargano, 2 out of 3 falls, TakeOver New York 2019. Walter against Tyler Bate, WWE United Kingdom Championship at TakeOver UK Cardiff last year. And last but not least, my match of the year for 2019, Will Ospreay against Shingo Takagi, Battle of the Super Juniors Finals last summer. And that rounds out my top 15 matches of the decade. And we will end with this. Trayvon from St. Charles, Missouri. I wanted to ask you a non-wrestling question. I know that you work in crisis management and public relations for your day job. What is the most stressful PR situation that you have had to deal with? Well, there have been a few. There have been more than a few in the 15 years I've been working in PR. A lot of situations where I would get, let's say, like a panicked call from someone who claims they were, you know, misquoted by a reporter in the article that I helped get. And the article comes out and you get that frantic call. They misquoted me or they said something negative about me. And then it's on my shoulders to try to call the reporter back and, you know, find out what happened and smooth things over, which sometimes you just can't do. You know, the reporter writes their story and you can't force them to take something out. If it's accurate, I mean, it is what it is. There was a celebrity divorce that we handled once where there was a lot of mudslinging happening on both sides and you have to sort of rein the client in and let them know there's an emotional way to handle these things. And then there's a smart way to handle these things. And you just hope that they know the difference between the two. Sometimes they don't. I'll give you another example here. When all of the Me Too movement stuff really started to bubble up, we were contacted by a famous person. I won't say who, but it is someone that you probably have heard of before. I think most people listening probably have heard of this person before. And he wanted us to represent him. And he was adamant that, you know, there had been some allegations that were levied against him, which is why he reached out to us. And he was adamant that it's not true. These allegations are not true, and it's going to ruin my reputation, and what do I do? And, you know, I wasn't the only one involved in the deliberations on whether to work with this guy or not. It was a pretty easy no from me. But you worry, you know, if we do take this person on as a client, am I going to have to, you know, draft statements defending this person if I think they're guilty and craft an entire PR campaign around trying to improve their image and improve their name and knock down any negative Google search results for this person, which is something a lot of SEO firms claim they can do. I think it's a waste of good money because the minute that something else comes out, and you know it will, the minute something else negative comes out, or there's follow-up stories on the allegations or something, those search results are going to come right back up. So I think trying to beat the algorithm is an exercise in futility, but there are ways that you can try to do it. There are firms that's all they do, right? Reputation management. Anyway, if I think you're guilty, especially of what this guy was accused of, if I think you're guilty, I cannot in good conscience work with you. I cannot in good conscience work on your behalf. I cannot attach my name to yours. I'm not a lawyer. I am under no obligation to represent somebody and give them a good defense, whether they're guilty or not. How some of these criminal defense attorneys can sleep at night, I'll never know. I can never do that. But anyway, so we slept on it for a night, and thankfully everybody agreed this was not something that we wanted to have any part of. And I would have refused anyway. I would have just said, look, I don't feel comfortable doing this. Let somebody else take the account. I'm not worried about losing my job or anything. I just would have said, no, I'm not doing it. You're going to have to find somebody else to do it. Sure enough, more stuff did end up coming out about this person not long after, as I figured would happen. So we ended up dodging a bullet there. You know, public relations is an interesting field. And I get questions, and I usually answer them directly. I don't usually answer it on the podcast, but I thought this might be something people find interesting when they ask me about what I do for a living. You know, public relations is an interesting field. I never planned to do PR. That was never my plan. It was never a dream. It was never a goal. I was originally in college. I was a broadcast journalism major. I was going to be doing news on TV. That was my goal. And, you know, while I was in college, I engineered at the college radio station for 3.5 years, and I learned to work the board and all that kind of stuff. But I soured on the broadcast thing because I just didn't like the way I looked on camera, for being honest, among other reasons. And so PR had just started to be offered as a new major, and it was a very similar major to what I was already taking. I wouldn't lose any credits that I had already earned. And I said, hey, you know, this looks kind of interesting. I think I'll give this a try. And I'll never forget what my journalism advisor said to me at the time. He had been an investigative reporter, very well-known investigative reporter, Newsday, you know, in New York for like 30 plus years. And then he started teaching, just a very well-respected guy. And he passed away many years ago. But I'll never forget walking into his office to tell him that I wanted to switch majors. And I could tell he was upset, you know, by this. And these words stuck with me. He said, journalism gives you power. PR gives you money. And as a college kid with student loan debt, I thought, well, I guess I'm making the right decision. I'll take the money over the power. By the way, that whole PR gives you money thing, that isn't true. I feel I was lied to. Anyway, I am in more pain right now than I can honestly say I have ever experienced in the 12 plus years I have been doing this podcast. I don't think I've ever sat here and been in as much physical agony as I have been recording this show. I don't know what I did earlier in the week. I thought I just pulled a muscle in my thigh or my hip or my leg or something, because it's like right on my right side, but in the middle. It's not like the knee or anything like that, but it kind of radiates down like the upper half of my leg, but it's right in my side. And I just assumed I must have pulled a muscle doing something. It'll go away on its own. And it's only gotten worse. You know, there's no bruising or anything. There's no visible like swelling or bruising or anything, but like to the touch, it hurts. And I've been walking around like an 80-year-old man these last 4 or 5 days. Just to sit in this chair, just to sit in this chair was painful. I am dreading having to get up out of this chair. So I wanted to make sure I got the show done. And, you know, here on Super Bowl Sunday, and everybody's going to be watching the big game or the commercials or whatever you plan on doing later. So I wanted to get this done. And my final Super Bowl prediction, if you missed it earlier, 49ers over the Chiefs, 28-24. If you have questions for the mailbag, keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I will be back with the weekly AEW Dynamite stream live on YouTube at 10 p.m. as soon as Dynamite goes off the air Wednesday night. Join me then and next Sunday for episode 638 of The Sound Off. Anyway, I guess my career is over. I guess WWE won't clear me. They won't clear me to compete, not if they saw me the way I've been walking around. But maybe if I go talk to Tony Khan and I you know, come back to WWE and I'm like, hey, you know, they offered me X amount of money. Maybe they'll clear me. That's apparently the new norm. That's how it works now. Take care, guys. I'll see you next Sunday.
The Solemonster sounds off.
Hello.
This is Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I would.
Okay, I thought so. See, I thought so. Okay.
The Solemonster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolemonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Solemonster on Twitter @Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solemonster sounds off.